All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. Yeah, it is a Tuesday, so that means it's time for Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. Yeah, beer, Two for Tuesday. Wait a second. Hold on. Two for Tuesday here. So that's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to make your Two for Tuesday request. We'll play them later. It's time for our visit with Tom Appel. He'll be joining us in a couple of minutes. Tom Appel, who is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He contributes to their Daily Drive blog, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. If you have any car or automotive-related questions or concerns, Tom is here live. He'll take your questions and help you out. And that's what he's here for. We're going to talk about some automotive news and things like that. But we also do want to take your questions if you're in the market for a car or if you have a car-related or auto-related question of any kind. Tom Appel will help you. 312-981-7200 for talk and text with any of those questions. Tom's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. So it's 312-981-7200. Also coming up on the show, we're going to talk a little language stuff. We're going to get into 20 words that turn 100 this year, 2019. We're also going to talk about some words that don't exactly mean what they sound like. So there's going to do a little language stuff and some products that you never thought would be obsolete. So some of these other topics, and the phone lines are always open at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And that's all coming up right here on the show. And we do have a Blackhawks Express to play back. And so that's coming up later as well. Our phone number, as always, for talk and text and any automotive questions that you have, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
All right, man. How about yourself?
I'm okay. So you heard that that kick is now considered a block.
Yes, so, changed by the NFL.
So should Packers should probably feel a little bit better.
I've heard both ways that it's one of those where he's like, obviously that changes the dynamic of everything. But I heard part of him still like, I need to make that kick. So, that definitely changes.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I still laugh every time the mascot falls over. It cracks me up every single time. We got a Blackhawks Express to play.
Yep.
And Tom Appel is here. We got a whole bunch of other fun stuff to talk about. Dan's producing here as he does every weekday morning till 5. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Doing very well.
All right. It is Tuesday morning, my friend. And you're ready to cover the news until 5. Well, you cover it past 5.
Gotcha, till 6.
Till 6 o'clock. So, there
he is.
Then
I do a face plant and nap.
There it is, right there. All right, so that's what's coming up on the show. Vic is in the newsroom. Dan is producing. I am your host. 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and any and all automotive and car-related questions. And speaking of which, let's welcome Tom Appel to the show. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Did you have were your holidays fun?
They were. My kid was back home for most of a month, so that was fun.
How's she doing in school?
She's doing great. Yeah, she's doing great. She did well for a semester, and I think she was glad to be home for a while, sleeping in every day.
Yeah,
as college kids will do when they don't have a schedule.
Right.
But yeah, she's doing good. Thank
you.
That's
good. Well, congratulations on that. That's fantastic. Well, we're here. It's a brand new year, and we got all kinds of new automotive and car related stories to talk about. We've got the Daily Drive blog to talk about, and some of the test drives that you've been doing, and we got our phone lines are open for talk and text. If anybody has any concerns or questions about cars or automotive things, Tom can give you some advice and help you out at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Tom, as always, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive.
Yeah, thanks. Consumer Guide Automotive, or just consumerguide.com. Consumer Guide's been around since 1967. We went online in 1995. Consumerguide.com is where all of our new car and used car reviews and reports live. Our long-form test drives live on our blog. That's the cgdailydrive.com blog. But you can just get there from Consumer Guide as well, either way. But get to the blog. We try to have some fun with the news. We look at old concept cars. I did a piece on the Trump limousine, for example. So there's all sorts of stuff there that's tertiarily related to the auto industry.
Okay, and that's all available at consumerguide.com. And I also really love the we'll talk about it later. How to push start your car? That chart.
I love that chart.
Yeah, which used to be a thing. People might not remember. It used to be a thing.
So. Yes. It's actually frightening.
Yeah, pretty. But now, so Tom, do you go back? What do? You go back into the old issues and stuff like that, and dig through that stuff to write those to write those blog posts?
Yeah, well, Consumer Guide stuff goes back to 1967, as I mentioned. So that's very fertile ground for blog posts now. But before that, we have an excellent library of old stuff. And that push start thing that you just mentioned actually comes from a roughly 1959 or 1960 book of helpful hints that was mailed out to policyholders by Allstate.
That's great. That's really great. You must have a lot of fun digging this stuff up.
Yeah, I really do. I love that stuff, and I love the old drawings.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite thing in any of that old content.
That's great. Great stuff. Okay, so what have you been driving? Tell me what you've been driving lately.
Yeah, today I just got into the 2019 Ram 1500 Laramie. Mm. The Ram pickup was redesigned for 2019, and the big news about the vehicle I'm driving is that it's equipped. Finally, there was sort of a slow launch of this, of the eTorque mild hybrid system. So this is optional in V8 models. It's about $1,400, but your fuel economy improves 2 in the city and 1 on the highway. So if you do a lot of driving, that would be worth your while. So I just got into it. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of mileage I get.
Mm. So far, it's early, but are you enjoying the feel of it and how it drives?
Yeah, the new Ram pickups are insanely luxurious. They're not even pickup trucks anymore. They're borderline luxury cars, and the cabin of this thing is just over the top. But yeah, I'm enjoying driving it very much.
Okay, and what have you driven also more recently as well?
Just to refresh my memory about what a truck feels like, I just got out of the Toyota 4Runner, which is an old school body on frame midsize SUV. And it's actually, if you need that, if you go someplace where the snow is deep or you have to ford a stream or something like that, the 4Runner feels like $1 million. It's a little big, a little heavy. But if you're actually looking for something that can tow and cross rutted roads and go through the woods, this is your vehicle.
Mm, okay. Now, how long, and I've asked this question before just to remind everybody, how long do you usually drive these cars? How long are you driving them? How many miles do you usually put on?
What we try to do is schedule a vehicle at our office for 2 weeks, and then we try to get 4 drivers through each vehicle.
Mm.
This is for our Best Buy voting. So each one of us drives it for either 3 or 4 days.
And so do the opinions vary a lot between you 4 people?
It's rare that they vary a lot, but we do end up at the end of the year with people who have certain favorites that they really appreciate, and that's where the deliberations can get interesting.
Yeah, we talked about that the last time you were on. About how some arguments you have to make a case for certain cars and the conversations can get a little intense.
They can, yeah. There are certain vehicles that, like, there's the new Ford EcoSport, for example. This is Ford's entry into the subcompact crossover field. 3 of our riders are pretty much just uninterested in the vehicle. We're just a little bit disappointed in it. But our guy Rick loves the thing.
Uh-huh.
He loves the strange side hinged rear hatch opening. He loves the interior materials and stuff. And they're like, I don't know what Rick's deal is, but he's a huge advocate of the EcoSport.
Oh wow. Okay, that's interesting. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right. Tom Appel is with us, and you can read his stuff at consumerguide.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And our phone lines are open right now, and our text lines are open. If you have a concern, an automotive question, if you're looking to get a car and you want some advice in the automotive world, Tom is an expert, and he'll help you out. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More with Tom right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about some words that turn 100 this year and some other phrases. And we love talking about language and also some products that you never thought would be obsolete. That's all coming up. If you want to make any comments or jump in here at any time, text or talk, it's 312-981-7200. And specifically right now, if you have questions about cars or any automotive-related questions or concerns, Tom Appel is here. And again, 312-981-7200. Tom is with Consumer Guide Automotive. He's the publisher of that. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. He joins us once a month, and we're glad to have him back. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Before we get to some of the stories that we're going to talk about here, just an observation here. You know, we just finished with the holiday season, okay?
Yeah.
And during the holiday season, there seems to be a plethora of TV commercials that involve people buying cars for their loved ones. Now, I've lived on this planet for over 53 years, Tom, and I don't know anyone who has ever purchased a car for someone for Christmas. Is this a common thing? And why is every single commercial during every single car commercial during the holiday season is about a husband buying a wife a car, or a wife buying a husband a car, or something like that? Is that really a phenomenon?
I don't think it is. I see these, and I don't know the answer to that question, and I've been asked this before.
Yeah.
I do know that someone in my office actually located a company that sells bows big enough for cars, and they didn't seem to be doing a lot of business.
Yeah, that's the other thing, Tom. Every single one of the cars in those commercials has a giant red bow on top of it.
There's the one that kills me is the guy that buys his wife a GMC Acadia, but she wants the pickup truck he bought himself.
Right.
And all I can think about is that that's $110,000 worth of stocking stuffers. That's a heck of a Christmas.
That's the thing. That's what I'm talking about, Tom. Every time I would, you know, just this past, you know, the past few weeks where you're inundated with these commercials, I just can't. Every time I watch one, I'm like, nobody buys cars for their husbands or wives. That just doesn't happen. And again, like you, how much money are you spending for Christmas? I mean, let me ask you this, Tom. Do you know, are sales during the holidays, does it spike?
No. Actually, you know, December starts to be, is a strange month because sales are sort of really strong towards the beginning of the month, and then they taper off as people sort of get distracted by holiday planning.
Right.
And then January and February are very slow sales months.
Right. Right.
So I have no idea whether or not the notion of, hey, I could give a car as a gift is really a trigger or not. I doubt it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's always been fascinating to me. And this year, I don't know why, but this year it seemed like every single car commercial. And, you know, depending on what, you know, sort of programming you're watching, there are several car commercials that happen during commercial breaks. And, you know, I watch a lot of Hawks games and stuff. And so, you know, there's a car commercial every break. It's beer and cars. And so, I just that was an observation that I made. It's like I don't believe these commercials. These people in these commercials don't exist.
I don't believe they happen, and I think it was primarily Lexus, GMC, and Mercedes running those ads this time.
Yeah.
This year, and Lexus always does it. Lexus just likes the big bows.
I can't believe you. Where is this? Do you know where this company is that makes the giant bows for the cars?
No. They were fairly expensive.
Are they?
But yeah.
So not only are you paying a ton of money for the car, but you're also paying a lot of money for the bow that just goes on top of it that you're going to pitch into the garbage in 20 minutes.
Yeah, my grandmother used to save bows, but that one seems too big.
No, that's what I was going to say. You can't reuse that one. Yeah, no, I mean, everybody, you know, my family reused bows all the time, but not that size. What are you going to?
Yeah.
So, all right. A couple of quick texts, Tom.
Okay.
773 area code says, we're interested in purchasing a 2019 Toyota RAV4 Hybrid. They won't be out until March, but what do you think of them?
I have not driven the RAV4 Hybrid yet. I really like the old RAV4 Hybrid. It's a fairly affordable system. It uses a system where only the rear wheels are driven by electricity, which cuts down on weight and cost, but it's nearly as effective. And for that reason, the hybrid is not that much more expensive than the conventional version, but the fuel economy is generally good. I seriously considered purchasing one, just full disclosure, of the last generation. I suspect it's going to be very good.
Okay. All right. Very cool. When did Toyota get into the hybrid game?
Wow. The first Prius came out almost 20 years ago, something like that?
Is it that long, really?
Yeah, and they've been in the game ever since. And virtually every Lexus model, for example, Lexus is a division of Toyota, is available as a hybrid. And most Toyota models are available as hybrids. And they're generally very good hybrids. And the fuel economy advantage is usually significant.
Do they kind of lead the hybrids then? Are they in the category?
Yeah, they're certainly selling the most hybrids, and in most categories in terms of just general refinement and seamlessness of operation, Toyota's kind of ahead of that game.
Okay. Also from the 773 area code. By the way, if you guys have any questions or concerns or automotive questions, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. What does Tom think of the 2019 Jeep Compass?
Oh, the Compass. The Compass is Jeep's compact crossover. It sold insanely well in 2018. I think there's a lot of good vehicles out there, but I wouldn't talk anyone out of buying this. It's generally space efficient. It's kind of fun to drive. My primary concerns with that vehicle is that the only engine available in the U.S. market is FCA's, that's Fiat Chrysler, FCA's Tiger Shark 2.4-liter engine, and it's a little gruff. I just don't think it's that refined, but I would definitely, if you want one, I would definitely drive that. And then I would try a couple other vehicles, try a Honda CR-V, and we just mentioned the RAV4.
The RAV4, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, so there's some of the texts that that we've gotten that are coming in. We're going to take a break here for the news in a minute here, Tom.
Okay.
We come back, we're going to talk about how auto sales increased in 2018.
Unexpectedly, yeah, they're up.
And then the original 1960 Ford Broncos are making a comeback.
Crazy.
And again, the first thing you think when I say Ford Bronco and people are hearing, what's the first thing that pops into people's minds when you say Ford Bronco?
Got to be O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so unfortunate.
It is, because the Ford Bronco, you know, a lot of people really love that car, and then all of a sudden now it's always associated with O.J. Simpson. That's like when we talk sports, Tom. And whenever I mention George Brett, who was one of the greatest baseball players who ever played the game, you know, amazing. First thing I think of when I think of George Brett is pine tar and then hemorrhoids. That's the first thing I think of. And it's so unfortunately, you know, like the first thing you think of when you think of Ford Bronco is O.J. Simpson and George Brett. Well, that would be hemorrhoids and pine tar, despite the fact that he was an amazing baseball player. So.
That is exactly the same thing.
All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
I will.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. We got more car stories and automotive stuff to talk about. And if you have questions or comments or concerns automotive related, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for our talk and text. So we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday morning. That means two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your request in now. That's one artist, two songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200 for your two for Tuesday requests. And also call that number or text that number for any and all automotive and car-related questions because Tom Appel is with us from Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom, and get your questions in now at 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, we got a caller here. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey, Nick. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I just got a comment about giving cars out to your spouse. In the good old days, perhaps better days, I was a car dealer's son, I was born in 52, so around 69, 70, I was dad's elf, and I slipped a lot of cars into garages on Christmas Eve at about midnight or 1 a.m.
Is that right?
To surprise the spouse. Usually the husband was surprising the wife. Mm. And, I don't know how we got the garage doors open without making a ruckus, but, did it several times.
Now, did you attach bows to the top of the car, John?
Well, I have a follow-up story, a sad addendum to that.
Uh-huh.
My big red bow story is that I can't remember. Dad was selling Buick, and we sold also the English sports car, the MG.
Mm.
And the elf was deputed to put big red bows on top of and around, I think, two or three MGBs that were in the showroom. And my sister, who's older, had a friend at the time who had, she was a mother that just had become, I think, oblivious to what her kids would do right in front of her. You know, and as she talked to my dad politely, like two islands in the stream, these three hellions came in and ripped everything off these cars, and I spent like 4 hours doing it.
Man.
And of course, I couldn't say anything. They were a friend of the family,
yeah.
and they were our customers, but I thought, if I could get my hands on them,
you know,
there'd be sticks and coal for those little buggers. You know.
Well, that was
my effort with a big red bow.
Those are great stories, John. Thanks for the call.
Sure thing. Okay. Bye-bye.
That's interesting, Tom. You had to sneak into people's garages on Christmas Eve.
It's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, the holiday buying car thing continues. Let's see. Now, speaking of car sales, auto sales increased in 2018. Let's talk a little bit about that, Tom. Tell us what you know about that.
Yeah, they did, although only a couple of companies really contributed to the actual growth. Just up a little bit. It was like 17.3 million last year, up from like 17.2 million the year before. But a lot of that was driven by Jeep, which had a phenomenal year. That is a brand that is being well nurtured by its parent company, and the iconic Wrangler has been redesigned for 2018. That's back. That's doing very well. And we just talked about the Compass a moment ago. That's selling very well as well. So people who are abandoning cars are really like going to Jeep. That and Subaru had a great year, which is a brand that just always seems to quietly have good years.
Yeah, and Fiat Chrysler looks like it had a great year, too.
Yeah, and that was almost driven
just
entirely by
the Jeep.
By Jeep, yeah. Some good business there at Ram, too.
Yeah, and then down for some of the other places, which is why have auto sales been going down, or have they leveled out over the years?
Well, they were doing fairly strong. What we saw was that incredible drop in car sales after the big economic crash of 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And we've been coming back ever since. But people thought that comeback was kind of over. And the year before last, 2017, everyone thought, well, that was the beginning of a slow but steady decline for a while. So this year came as quite a surprise. Not quite a surprise, just a little bit of a surprise. Should have been down this year, up a little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the latest on that. We've got some texts that have come in, Tom.
Okay.
Jesse says, hello, Tom. Have you or one of your coworkers driven any of the Audi electric vehicles? If so, what's the verdict?
No, the big news from Audi is the Audi e-tron, which is going to be a mid-size crossover, and I hope to drive that very soon. I'm not entirely sure when test-drivable examples will be hitting the U.S., but that is a mid-size car, should be competing more or less with the Jaguar I-Pace, though it's a little bit bigger. It's going to have a 90-kilowatt-hour battery, should be good for like 250, 280 miles within a plug-in. Very interested to drive it. Have not seen one yet.
Okay. Squat says, in 2010, I bought my mom and dad a 2005 Buick LeSabre. It wasn't new, but they needed a car in the worst way. I'm assuming he means for Christmas, or just bought it for him in general.
Good kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, one of my favorite car names of all time, the LeSabre.
That is a great car name.
Yeah, oh, that's one of my favorite car names of all time, the Le Sabre. 608 area code says, Tom mentioned Ram trucks. I love my 2016 Ram Longhorn. Dodge builds a great truck.
Yeah, the thing that Dodge did a couple of years ago, and it included the 2016, is that they engineered a coil spring rear suspension. All the other major big pickups use a leaf spring rear suspension, and it made all the difference in the world in terms of ride and handling. The Dodges, well, now Rams, they're a step above. It's fascinating how well they ride and handle, and it's impressive. You can feel it from behind the wheel, and yeah, people who own them love them.
Mm. All right. Mary says, my son has a Tesla, is an obsessed with it. What does Tom think of them? And that brings us to a story concerning Tesla cutting prices.
Yeah, I've only spent significant time with one Tesla. It was a Model X, which is the crossover. And I was very impressed by it dynamically. If I was going to dislike anything about that car, I thought the price was a little high, and I thought that the ride was a little brittle, but it was riding on ridiculously huge 22-inch wheels that are not necessary, and they were optional. But, yeah, I mean, the Teslas I've driven, I've been impressed by. I don't have that much experience with them.
Not much experience, but you have been impressed. Well, Mary's son is obsessed, Tom.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
Okay. And then I just got a story right in my hand right here. Shares of electric car and solar panel maker Tesla, Inc. tumbled Wednesday morning after the company cut vehicle prices by $2,000 and announced fourth quarter sales figures that fell short of Wall Street estimates.
Yeah, two things about that now. The total sales fell short in the fourth quarter, but Tesla came very close to delivering all the Model 3s that it meant to deliver, and in fact sold 25,000 Model 3s in December.
Wow.
So not only did they actually build them, which was the question, whether they could actually build as many as they always promised to build, but they actually sold that many. So I hate to sound like a Tesla apologist because I've been a naysayer for so long, but even if the numbers are a little bit disappointing, there's an awful lot of bright spots in those numbers. However, you mentioned the $2,000 cost reduction, and this is a problem for profitability. The federal tax credit, which was $7,500, has been used up by Tesla. The deal was once you sold 200,000 vehicles with that, the credit dropped by half. So
uh-huh.
From $7,500 to $3,750, Tesla's going to comp you about half of that in a reduced price, but that's going to hurt their profitability, and they're still going to lose some sales because they're still a slightly higher cost being borne by the consumer with the reduced tax incentive.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting stuff right there.
Yeah. It's messy.
Yeah. By the way, you said 25,000 cars just in December?
Just Model 3s.
Model 3s. 25,000
Model
3s. Yeah,
that's the new compact car.
In December. Well, see, now we know who's buying all the Christmas cars for people.
Yeah.
That's where all the bows are going. The bows are going on top of Model 3s.
Yeah.
All right. Another text here. And again, you guys, if you want to join us, talk or text 312-981-7200. Laura says, what is Tom's opinion of the new Jeep Gladiator? Is it useful as a utility truck or just a fun toy?
Most people are going to buy it as a fun toy. For people who don't know, the Gladiator is Jeep's first pickup truck in a very long time. How long? I'm going to say like 20 plus years. And it's based on the Wrangler, and it looks like the Wrangler. So it should be priced like the Wrangler. So it's going to be a little bit expensive for a pickup truck. But that said, in terms of it being a toy, it should be every bit as capable off-road as the Wrangler. So I think it's going to have an audience. That's a fairly stout piece of architecture. Should be able to tow and do a lot of things you would need from a pickup.
Mm-hmm.
But it is going to come in on the pricey side.
Okay. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, we mentioned the original 1960s Ford Broncos are going to be made by an Illinois company, new. What, tell us about this.
Yeah, there's a company called Gateway Bronco in a place called Hamel, Illinois. I'm not familiar with Hamel, but they're doing something that not entirely uncommon in the auto world, but they are finding first-generation Broncos. So that's going back from 1966 to 1977. And you had mentioned the OJ Bronco, but actually this generation was smaller, a little bit more like a Jeep Wrangler.
Mm.
And they were really just great-looking little trucks, and they were really useful off-road, and they were light, they were small, they were simple. And there's just a lot of truck enthusiasts who love these. So this company, Gateway Bronco, is finding original trucks, or you can bring them your truck, and they will rebuild them from the ground up to give you what is essentially a brand-new vehicle.
Wow.
It's very expensive, but the results, based on the pictures I've seen, are very cool. And this is one of those vehicles because it was so simple that you can do this to that vehicle.
Now, this is a small market of people who are going to be getting these.
They run from something like $100,000 to $200,000. So the market is necessarily small, but it's just good to see these vehicles being restored at all. And I'm just excited that there's an audience for vehicles like these because it's the kind of thing that seems to be shrinking over time.
Mm. And are there a lot of companies like this Gateway Bronco that do similar things to different models of cars?
Yeah, I actually found another company called Classic Ford Broncos that does exactly the same stuff. So there are companies out there that do this. And you'll find other vehicles, too. Generally, they need to be older vehicles that are fairly simple and easy to restore because the minute you start looking for small interior pieces or weird trim pieces, the whole thing gets expensive and complicated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting that there's a subculture that exists out there for this.
Yeah, and I'm glad there is. It warms my heart.
Okay. All right, Tom, hang on, all right?
I will, thanks.
All right, Tom Appel is with us, and he is with Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check out consumerguide.com and follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And again, we got some more minutes here with Tom. He's going to hang out with us, and if you have any concerns or questions or automotive questions or inquiries, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More with Tom after this on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 o'clock. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 with his morning drive. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. Welcome back, everyone. And we're joined by Tom Appel, who joins us once a month. He's with the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And you can also just directly ask a question here while he's with us. That's automotive or car related. 312-981-7200. And Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Zimmer Quicksilver. This is a piece that you wrote for the Daily Drive blog. Give us the Zimmer Quicksilver.
So Zimmer, for people who remember, is a car that was making these sort of crazy, over-the-top, retro-looking cars that looked a little bit like brass-era American cars, but were based on current cars, and were just festooned with things like horns and chrome wheels and strange spare tires that served no function. But like Excalibur, if people remember the company Excalibur, it's the same kind of really strange car. A lot of them were based on the early Mercedes-Benz SSK, which was a truly beautiful car, but they never quite hit the mark. But Zimmer decided at some point to make a smaller vehicle, and they based it on the Pontiac Fiero of all vehicles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the Fiero suits itself well to this because it had plastic body panels that came off easily, and other than that, it was a full chassis. So you could easily remove the body panels from a Fiero and replace them with other body panels. So Zimmer did this, and they went absolutely over the top doing this. And every body panel is different. And to stretch the car, they couldn't stretch a Fiero easily because the engine was actually behind the cabs. They had to stretch the car up front. So there's a very strange bit of proportion to this car, and I recommend everyone look at this on our website just to see the pictures, just to see what it looks like. And it looks a little bit like an old Lincoln had a baby with a Fiero, maybe. What's interesting is they're strangely collectible now.
They are.
Yeah.
Well, what do they go for?
I've seen good examples going for around $25,000, unbelievably.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they're fairly rare, and once they're sorted out, they should be fairly reliable. So, I mean, and the parts aren't expensive. They're Fiero parts, which can be had anywhere. So you're not going to see yourself coming and going in one of these.
No. Wow. All right. That's the Zimmer Quicksilver. By the way, I like that you maintain that it could have been worse.
Yes. It's actually, for as much as I find it strange to look at and almost unsettling, it's sort of a cohesive look.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Because I love that you also point out that if you look at it long enough, it becomes cool.
Yes.
Okay. It takes a while for your mind and your eyes to adjust.
Yeah, it takes a bit. But
that's funny. All right. We got a couple more texts here, Tom.
Okay.
All right. Jerry says, has Tom heard about the new Ford Mustang with the EcoBoost?
Yeah, what happened for 2018 is that the 2.3-liter EcoBoost engine, which had been optional, became standard. So that's what we're talking about right now. That is the standard engine for 2019 as well. I think it's rated at 310 horsepower, which is more than many of the V8s that preceded it. And it's actually a very nice base engine. Fuel economy is good. It develops all sorts of torque down low. If you think you don't need a rocket ship, I think that the base engine is just fine in the Mustang.
Okay. Jeff says, what does Tom think of the new Ford Explorer? Is it well made? Is it worth the cost?
Well, the new Ford Explorer I haven't seen yet. That's actually being introduced this week.
Mm.
So Ford is introducing a brand new Explorer. The first one we're going to see is actually a police pursuit vehicle. Those are actually built at the Torrance Avenue plant in Chicago.
Is that right? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a local product. And then there's going to be a Lincoln based on that product also. So we're going to see the Ford police vehicle, the Lincoln, and then we'll see the base Explorer after that. Interesting thing, it's going to be a rear drive-based vehicle. It's been front drive up to now, and that may actually be a nod to police service. I'm not entirely sure, but it could also represent sort of a commitment to general refinement of the vehicle. So it could go up in price.
Oh, okay. 231 area code says Saturn would put a big red bow on a new car when the buyer picked it up from the showroom. What?
Oh, man, I knew that. In 1993, my sister bought a Saturn SL1, and they put the bow on there and took her picture with the car. I remember that.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, now we know how that company stays in business.
Exactly.
We're learning all about the Big Red Bow Company this morning. That's my takeaway from the conversation this morning, Tom.
And that's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you learned anything today.
Exactly. Now I want to learn how to, but now I want to close it out by learning how to push start my car. Tell everybody where you found this, and I'm looking at this chart. This is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Someone who works in my office was cleaning out his aunt's basement, and he presented me with a book called Money Saving Facts for the Car Owner. And this book had been distributed by Allstate, I'm thinking back in 1959 or 1960.
Uh-huh.
And it's filled with information that no car owner today would ever need to know. How to advance your timing, how to clean your carburetor, just great stuff like that. How to install a light under the hood of your vehicle. No one would do that. But this one page actually has instructions for how to push start your car. And not just any car, your car with automatic transmission.
Yeah.
A thing I literally did not know people ever did.
Yeah.
But there are rules here, and they're incredible because these involve having your car pushed by another car up to a speed of between 15 and 25 miles an hour while you're in neutral, and then slamming it into first.
That's got to be good for the vehicle, right?
It can't be good for either vehicle.
Oh, my God.
But there are very precise directions for how to do it based on different vehicles. I love this chart so much. It also gives the brand names of a lot of these transmissions, which are really great.
Yeah, the Dynaflow was in the Buick. The Dynaflow, push in neutral to 15 miles per hour and then shift to low. The Cadillac had the hydromatic transmission. Push in neutral up to 20 miles an hour, and then shift right to drive.
Just go straight to drive. What could go wrong?
And this is like a handy chart that you can just like carry around or you know, just keep with you. Yeah, some of the names of these, the names of these transmissions are great.
Yeah, I love these.
The Pontiac, the Hydromatic Power Glide 53.
Which is a quality name.
Yeah, a great name. Put it in neutral, push it up to 25 miles per hour, and then hit drive. Put it right into low.
The Packard Ultramatic.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember that name. The Packard Ultramatic. That one's up to 25, and then just slam it into drive. It's good. It's all good.
And this is all helpful. Allstate. I mean, I'm assuming that Allstate did this so that they could get more money from people. That would be my. And Allstate put this stuff out. It's like, yeah, these people are going to follow these instructions, and we're going to have all kinds of claim. We're going to have all kinds of money coming from these people. Always push a car with an automatic transmission when trying to start it. When the engine starts, it might jump forward, and if being towed, damage the car ahead. This is just priceless, man.
Yeah, so don't tow it up to speed.
Right.
I assume then, this just assumes that you and the person helping you out have chains in your trunk. I mean, that's just... I don't know how else he would have done that.
Oh, that's so funny. And this chart, you can see it in all its glory cgdailydrive.com. That's really fun. I love that this was found in a guy's aunt's basement.
Yeah, it's in great condition. I've gotten a couple of articles out of it, and I plan to continue milking this for comedy value.
Well, I remember one of the other articles, I can't remember the specifics of it, but we talked about one of the things that was taken from that book.
Yeah, I think it was a quiz on how to maximize economy of your car.
Oh, that, yeah, I think that's what it was. I think that's what it was. Fantastic. All right. Well, that's great. People should check that out for sure at the cgdailydrive.com. And also, you have the forgotten concept, the Oldsmobile profile.
Yeah. Yeah, Oldsmobile seemed to understand the crossover long before it happened. It's a good-looking little concept car.
And that's out there, too. You can read it there as well. And also, I think next month it will be right around Auto Show time here in Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
What are the dates for that? Do you know?
I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but the actual open days of the auto show always include Valentine's Day.
Ah, okay. All right.
So they include that weekend, yeah. So the press days will be right before that.
All right. So we'll get to jump in to some of the stories about the auto show as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Tom, always a pleasure, my friend, and we will talk to you next month.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Take care, buddy. Tom Appel, everybody. He's the best. Again, he's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He contributes to their Daily Drive blog. And you can check out the website, consumerguide.com. That'll also take you to the Daily Drive blog. And again, follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we will talk with him again next month, right before the auto show. All right. Take a break. The news is coming up next. It's 2 for Tuesday. That's our first 2 for Tuesday. Give me 2 for Tuesday! Man, I haven't heard Simply Red in a long time. Robert in Wicker Park is requesting Simply Red. That's Holding Back the Years. And, yeah, so that's our first 2 for Tuesday. And we would love to hear from you on what you would like to request for 2 for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs. They did a great cover. Simply Red did a great cover of If You Don't Know Me By Now. Okay.
That's fine. Most people would guess, well, that would be the other one.
Yeah. Their cover is great, and that's a great. The original version of that song is fantastic, but they do a really great cover of that. So, Mick Hucknall, right?
Yes.
Red-haired dude. Crazy red hair. Yeah. They were big for about 14 minutes in the late 80s. He's got a good voice, that guy. So, hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. And it's also the morning of my screening of Slapshot. One of the best comedies ever, the best hockey movie ever made. Absolutely hilarious, starring Paul Newman. It is a classic from the 70s. And I'm showing it tonight at 8 o'clock. At the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movico. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. And there's another special offer right up the street at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. We're going to have Slapshot night. So right around 6 o'clock, head over to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. It's located in the Crown Plaza Chicago O'Hare Hotel. And they're hosting what they're calling an old-time hockey night. There's 15% off all of your food if you're a film club member and you have proof that you're going to see Slapshot. 15% off all your food. And there's an old-time hockey beer special of $2 Schlitz Tall Boys. Dan, you know that was my brand.
That's right.
Yeah, $2
Much
Schlitz
paraphernalia
Tall Boys.
In your house.
I still, even though I don't drink, I don't drink Schlitz anymore. I still have Schlitz stuff in my apartment. But yeah, $2 Schlitz Tall Boys go along with your 15% off of your food. And the food is really terrific at Murray Brothers Caddyshack. The service is great. The management is great. They're really great. We had a great time there last month before our screening of Scrooged, which starred Bill Murray. And they had such a good time. Management was like, I know none of the Murray Brothers are in Slapshot. There's really no connection, but we had such a great time and so many great people showed up that we want to offer this 15% off special again and then throw in a $2 Schlitz beer special. So come on out and go to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. We'll start piling it in around 6 o'clock. We'll hang out there and then make our way over to the movie theater afterwards. It's only a couple of blocks away. It's the AMC Rosemont 18. So the movie will start at 8. I will introduce it, and then I'll talk about it afterwards, and we'll have a great time. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's Slapshot tonight, an absolute classic. Reserve your seats right now so they're waiting for you. We're actually selling a lot of tickets for this. So go to amctheaters.com right now. Find the Slapshot screening. Go to the seating chart. Pick the seats that you want. They'll be waiting for you tonight at the AMC Rosemont 18. Again, only $10 to get in, and parking is free. So reserve your seats for Slapshot, the absolute classic best hockey movie of all time. I wouldn't bring kids to this one. I would not. Little heavy-duty language in this. some really heavy-duty language. And it's very politically incorrect. There's also some stuff in this movie that you can get away with in 1977 that you couldn't possibly get away with without offending a lot of people. So, but this is a classic movie, one of my favorite. This is actually one of my favorite movies of all time, and I know this one by heart. So we are going to have a good time. And it all started at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, starting around 6 o'clock. Get some food, have some Schlitz, 15% off all your food, and then head over to the movie to see Slapshot at 8 o'clock. AMCtheaters.com. To see that. And also, if you want to call up the Caddyshack restaurant, if you want to make reservations, or if you have any questions about the Caddyshack restaurant in Rosemont, it's 847-443-3673. Tell them you're with the Nick DiGilio Film Club. You're coming to see Slapshot. They'll answer any of your questions. And if you want to make a reservation, you can do it that way, too. It's 847-443-3673. And I hope to see you guys all out. It's going to be a really great time. Just to see that movie on the big screen with a crowd is so great. And I have not seen it on the big screen since it came out, you know, maybe a re-release in the late 70s or early 80s, but I have not seen it on the big screen in you know, like 40 years, 35, 40 years. So, and it's the big, we have a digital remastered version of it that we're going to show. And so there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to call us for on our show here. So we have some conversation that we're going to have here, some stories about words. And Dan, the 20 words that are turning 100 in 2019, where did we get that one from?
Mental Floss.
Oh, this is, oh, okay. So actually both of these articles are for Mental Floss because they do a lot of Mental Floss. First of all, Mental Floss provides a lot of content for this show because they really have a lot of fun articles and fun lists and things like that, and, you know, like pop culture stuff and stuff that we love to talk about, like in this case, language and words and things. And so they're fun. It's a terrific website, and it's mentalfloss.com. But 20 words that are turning 100 in 2019. Wow, 100. So the first one is anti-stress. That's 100 years old, anti-stress? The adjective anti-stress came along decades before de-stress, which was introduced to the English language in 1979. It refers to anything that prevents or alleviates stress. How does de-stress not show up till 1979, but anti-stress is 100 years old? There must have been a lot of stress in 100 years ago. You would think, right?
Yeah, probably.
That doesn't seem like a word that's 100 years old, though. That seems a little more modern, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, it seems like almost New Agey. You know what I mean? It's got kind of a feel to it.
And I'm interested that they called it stress back then.
Yeah.
I would assume that stress was developed later. I mean, it was probably, you know, just referred to as something else.
Yeah, it's true. All right, how about this? Apple knocker. You may have attended an apple knocker wedding in the past. In 1919, the sense of the word meant rustic. Dictionary.com states it could also mean uncouth or rude. Would an apple knocker wedding? What does that mean? It's an uncouth wedding, or out in the woods or something?
Like a rustic, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So a rustic, an apple knocker wedding. I've never used that. I mean, I've heard the term. I think somewhere in the cobwebs of my empty head, I believe I've heard that term, but I've never used it. Apple knocker. A newspaper article from 1927 described an apple knocker as a peculiar type of human being who insists upon doing and saying things that, while offering satisfaction to himself, causes mental and physical inconvenience to others. Well, I'm guilty of that. So you can describe... Okay, so apple knocker has several meanings then. Over the years, it's changed. But an apple knocker... Has anybody ever used the term apple knocker to describe somebody who causes mental and physical inconvenience to others by what they say? Maybe that term was used in the early days of pro wrestling. Because doesn't that sound like something? I'm the apple knocker.
Right.
That could actually be like a wrestling character. In the cage match tonight, you know, it's The Rock versus the apple knocker. I don't even know how to pronounce this. Ballet Domaine? Swan Lake lovers, this one's for you. Ballet Domaine is a devotee of ballet. It stems from the Russian balotomane, which unites the words ballet and mania. And balletomania is a noun. Okay, so if you are part of the balletomania, then you're a ballomane.
Ballettomane.
Ballettomane? They actually pronounce
it?
Wait, one more time?
Ballettomane.
Well, they're actually pronouncing the T. Ballettomane. Okay.
Ballettomane.
I've never heard that before. I'm not a big ballet guy, though, so maybe that... And by the way, Apple Knocker will be wrestling at Ballettomania, if anybody's wondering where you can see Apple Knocker. All right, how about bats? Unlike the animal, which Merriam-Webster defines in the singular form, bat, with an S, that's synonym of batty, as in mentally unstable or unhinged. So bats means you're nuts. Bat is the animal. Okay. All right. Beaver tail. This curiously named plant is a prickly pear cactus that grows in the southwestern U.S. and northern Mexico. British pastries, known as arlets, are also sometimes called beaver tails, but that reference came later. Okay. Have you ever heard beaver tail? Dan?
Never heard before now.
And it's a plant, a prickly pear cactus that grows in the southwestern U.S. and northern Mexico. Beaver tail. I love how some of these things morph, though. And then it's a British pastry. Can I get that beaver tail? You don't want that. It's a prickly pear cactus. No, I mean the pastry, the British pastry. I'll take a beaver tail. You can't have a beaver tail without taking the whole animal. You'll hurt the beaver. Oh God, that's going to end up on the show on Friday. There you go, everybody. Jeez. All right, why don't we take a break? If you want to jump in here with any weird terms, maybe jargon that you use, We can jump into that topic as well. Weird terms or things that you referred to differently than other people. 312-981-7200. We'll get more history here from words that are... Whoa.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so words that are... words that are...
That's the music Apple Knocker walked out to during the latter
minute. That's his entrance music? Apple Knocker's entrance music, everybody. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. That's, yeah. Simply Red. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. And I love that song. That's a great version of that song. That's If You Don't Know Me By Now. Robert in Wicker Park was our first person to get his Two for Tuesday requests in. And the phone lines are open. 312-981-7200 is the number. All right, we are talking about words that are 100 years old, that turn 100 this year in 2019. So let's get back to it. Complementary close, C-O-L-E-S-E. The phrase that comes before your signature and expresses your regard for the receiver, such as sincerely yours, is considered a complimentary close. Oh, I didn't know that. Did you know that, Dan?
I did not.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Complimentary close. So when you say sincerely yours or love, whatever, that's a complimentary close. I like that. But this one's 100 years old. Danish pastry. This delicious and often fruit-filled pastry isn't actually Danish at all. The treats are called Viennese bread in Denmark because they were brought to the country by Austrians. And nowadays, we just call them Danishes, even if it is a misnomer. Now, you know, Dan, when you were away last week, we did a segment where we were talking about Chicagoese and words and phrases that were pretty exclusive to this city. And someone texted in that we don't say Danish here, you know, on the East Coast and stuff like that. They say Danish. Here we say sweet roll, which is true. It's true. We say sweet roll here in Chicago instead of Danish.
That's interesting because I've only referred to it as a Danish.
Really?
I've never heard sweet roll.
You've never heard sweet roll?
No.
Wow. Maybe it's an age thing. I don't know. Maybe it's an age, because when I was a kid, it was always sweet rolls.
Huh.
It's still, and I still call, my dad still calls it sweet rolls. I still call it sweet. Maybe it's because I'm old. I don't know, but someone texted that in last week when we were talking about that. Because we were doing stuff like, you know, front room.
Sure.
Gangway.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. The stuff that's exclusive to Chicago. The stuff that makes this city so unique. And then, of course, we started getting into the, you know, it got to the point where we were, you know, having people calling in and stuff and texting in. And we just started sounding like the super fans. and that, you know, that sketch, as funny as that sketch is, I also hate it.
Sure.
Man, I it's funny as hell, and I love it. And Robert Smigel is the guy who came up with it. It was his baby. He's the, by the way, for those people who don't, because when you watch that sketch, the old version of that sketch, you have Mike Myers, okay? Okay, recognizable Mike Myers. You have Chris Farley, obviously recognizable. You have George Wendt, recognizable. The guy that you don't know, that's Robert Smigel. That's Robert Smigel. You now probably know who he is. I mean, you know who Robert Smigel is now. But back in those days, he was just a writer on SNL. And he had not created Triumph yet or, you know, been in front of the camera or anything like that. And he didn't have his trademark goatee because he's wearing a fake mustache and he looks completely different. But that's Robert Smigel. He's the other, he's the guy that you don't know who's in the Chicago Superfan sketches. But yeah, it got to the point where we were just acknowledging that, okay, maybe we do kind of. But then when people watch that, people from different parts of the country watch that and they go, look at these idiots from Chicago. Look at how they talk and act. So, like, that sketch is like a double-edged sword for me because I think it's really funny and it makes me laugh. But then I'm like, well, everybody thinks we're idiots. Like, everybody thinks everybody in Chicago acts like these four morons and talks like that.
And eats like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Coughing up whole pork chops and stuff. That's it. Chris Farley has a heart attack. He has a heart attack during every sketch. And then they ask him, how many is that for you? That's a baker's dozen. So, no, you never heard sweet roll?
Never heard sweet roll.
Wow.
Or maybe I have and I just didn't realize it was a Danish, but.
Yeah, that's what they did. So, you know, I call it sweet roll too, but I mean, I refer to it, you know, you can obviously, that's what a Danish is. It's a sweet roll. But yeah. Yeah. When I worked at McDonald's, we called it Danish because that was, you know, you would stick it in the, you know, we used to have, do they still have Danish? Well, they got all kinds of stuff now at McDonald's. But back when I worked at McDonald's, like in the early 80s, they had a steamer for the Danish. So you'd have, I can't remember what kind, I know they had different kind of, a couple of fruit kinds and a cheese Danish they had. And you would stick it onto the, there were like little spikes inside the steamer. And you would take the Danish and put it in and jam it onto the spikes and then close the thing and press the button and it would steam the Danish. So when you would give it to someone, it would be nice and hot and steamed. And we used to sell those things like crazy. The cheese Danishes were the ones that sold the most. But, yeah, we referred to them as Danish there. They were not sweet rolls. So, all right, how about this? Didgeridoo. This fun-to-say instrument invented by Australian Aborigines first wormed its way into the English language in 1919. It's essentially a bamboo or wooden trumpet. Do you think a didgeridoo sounds like a trumpet? I don't think a didgeridoo sounds like a trumpet.
Yeah, that would not be the instrument I would think of.
I mean, it would fall into the category of an instrument that you blew into in order to get the sound, but that doesn't sound anything like a trumpet. I mean, nothing sounds like a didgeridoo. The only thing that sounds like a didgeridoo is a didgeridoo. All right, how about this one? Dunker. This early sports team is straightforward, and this early sports term is straightforward enough. It refers to a basketball player who makes dunk shots. The sport itself was invented 28 years earlier in Springfield College in Massachusetts. Okay, now here's one I'm surprised is 100 years, is 100, completely surprised is 100 years. People were dunking basketballs in 1919? Really?
That's a good point.
I mean, I remember dunking becoming like a big deal in the 70s. That's when I, and like Dr. J and all those guys. That's when I don't remember historically a lot of, you know, guys in the 50s and 60s dunking, let alone in 1919. But I think the dunking phenomenon began with Dr. J, and that was in the 70s. And then it just increased from there. Remember when they started shattering backboards? Was it Dominique Wilkins? Didn't Dominique Wilkins break like 5,000 backboards, shatter them?
That sounds right.
Wow, I can't believe there were dunking basketballs in 1919.
I wonder, too, you know, if it's not like a dunk that we know today where it's like they touch the rim, but more just like they managed to get above the rim and then just like drop it in.
Yeah.
You know, because you see those old timey basketball footage and, you know, the way they dribble and the way they shoot and things like that. It's just,
I just don't even see guys in 1919 getting off the ground.
Right.
You know,
I mean, there's no shot clock. They used to just dribble the ball out.
I mean, I just don't see them getting a lot of height. You know? Yeah, that's pretty weird. Yeah, no, I'm pretty convinced that the art of the dunk as we know it now began with Dr. J. I think Julius Erving is the guy that is sort of, you know, the sort of spectacular show-offy crazy dunks that we see nowadays have evolved from where it all started, and that was Julius Erving. I'm pretty sure. So, all right, we got a break here for news, and we got more. If you guys want to jump in here, if you're a dunker from 1919, eating a Danish, 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. 301 area code requesting Chicago 25 or 6 to 4. 25 or 6 to 4. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Tuesday morning. We're here until 5 a.m., and we're talking about words that are 100 years old this year, 2019, and how some of them are hard to believe that they're that old. And we were talking about dunker, which is this early sports term is straightforward enough. It refers to a basketball player who makes dunk shots. Sport itself was invented 28 years earlier at Springfield College in Massachusetts. And I was saying that I find it hard to believe that dunker could be 100 years old, and I just can't picture guys playing basketball in 1919 dunking. But then we were thinking maybe it's a little bit different. You know, what we think of in terms of dunking today is a little bit different than what it was back 100 years ago. And we got some people who are calling in. Here is Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning. I forgot to wish you and then Dan Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you.
Thank you. I happened to saw a program the other night. It had to do with people, things left in the well. It had to do with basketball. And, yeah, there was dunking allowed, but it was not outlawed. It was banned once Lou Alcindor, Kareem, started playing basketball. And for a while there, it was not allowed in basketball, the dunk shot. But they did bring it back, I don't know, less than 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of interesting.
So it existed. Did they talk about how far back actual dunking existed in the sport? Because I just can't imagine it being a popular thing in 1919. I don't know why.
It was, as far as I know, it was one of the original things you could do in basketball. And it was actually to the point before you couldn't even dribble. When you had to pass a shot, you had to stop.
Yeah.
And then pass the ball. You couldn't dribble with it, which seems kind of odd nowadays.
It does seem weird, yeah. It does seem weird, yeah.
As far as sweet rolls, you know, I always considered sweet rolls just a generic term for all sweet rolls. And like a Danish would be something like something that's more flat and filled with fruit in the center, personally, but that's just me.
Yeah. I think sweet rolls is kind of a generic term, and it includes Danish and anything that sort of resembles a Danish if it has, like, fruit in it or it has, like, maybe a frosting on top of it. Glenn, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you, Nick?
All right.
Hey, Nick, I wanted to tell you about a few years ago when Gus Johnson played for Washington. He came to Milwaukee, and my friend Jeff was up in the grandstands, and all of a sudden these guys were like holding them underneath, and then they did a couple fast breaks, and he came down and he slammed the ball so hard the basket just shattered, and my friend Jeff said that they were selling beer to him. He was underage. They were, you know, they didn't know what to do after a while. I didn't really believe him, but that's what he said. And then as far as pastries go, I'm a peanut square guy, and I just wanted to say Happy New Year.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Bill. Take care. There you go. So they got a kid, underage kid, drunk, and he shattered a backboard. Jeez. Canadian Bill says beaver tail are also sold at the carnivals. They're sometimes called elephant ears. That's what they're called here, right? Elephant ears? They're not beaver tails. Like if you go to like a fair or something, it's elephant ears. 301 area code says, I do recall the term complimentary clothes from back in the 60s when I was at parochial school in Pennsylvania. I like that term. 309 area code says, what about Wilt dunking in the 50s and 60s? All right. Bob Medea, Nick, and 816 area code all say Daryl Dawkins was famous for shattered backboards. That's right. Daryl Dawkins busted out a lot of backboards. Shattered a lot of them.
I was surprised to find out. I was thinking maybe like, well, maybe the rim was lower, so maybe that's why back in 1919 they could dunk. But according to this, Naismith had 10 feet from the beginning. So it wasn't a situation where the rim used to be like 7 feet,
yeah,
and somebody could do it. And then according to the Wikipedia article on slam dunks, the earliest known attributed dunks were by Bob Kierland in the 1940s and 50s. He was 7 feet tall and was the first known person to do it in
there you go.
The games.
All right. Yeah, but it was one of those deals where it was just like the exceptionally tall guys would do it, you know?
Right.
I mean, guys are over so quick. Will Chamberlain was like, what is Will Chamberlain? He's except 7 feet tall. So I think in the early days, if you were 7 feet tall, you could actually dunk without jumping very high. But then in the days when like guys who were like 6'3" or whatever were jumping, you know, like how tall is Jordan? What is he like 6'4"?
6'6".
Is he? Oh, he's 6'6"? Oh, okay. I mean, that's pretty tall, but still, that's a lot of height, man. He would get, well, his name is Air Jordan, so yes, I mean, yeah. But everything, you know, it is interesting how all sports have changed. You know, like tonight, obviously, Dan, you know, I'm showing the movie Slapshot. And that movie, when you watch that movie, it's like, wait a minute. These guys aren't wearing helmets. There's barely any pads. The goalie's just got like a face mask on and like very, very little padding on his body. And the sticks are wooden. And guys are really slamming each other into the boards and stuff like that. And how things have changed and the rules have changed over the years and the style in which you play any kind of sport. And basketball is another one that has completely, you know, evolved over the years.
There was an interesting kind of back and forth about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. There was a free agent pitcher who was on some podcast, and Babe Ruth came up, and he said, you know, Babe Ruth wouldn't be able to do anything today. It was probably in relation to Shohei Ohtani and all that. And he's just like, you know, Babe Ruth couldn't hit my, you know, knuckleball, you know,
yeah.
He couldn't even do it. And like, it brought up a big back and forth between historians or not, because they say the one game that kind of stayed true is baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Like a guy who played baseball in the 1900s in theory could play baseball today and still have some level of success. And a lot of people said he would need a little bit of time, but he probably could still hit a ball very far, even if it was traveling 20 to 30 miles faster than it was
back
when he was playing.
We
couldn't say that again. And to your point, a hockey player today couldn't, you know, versus a hockey player back then
or a
basketball player back then versus a basketball player now.
And also, in terms of Babe Ruth and what he would play, would he be a good pitcher? Would he be considered a good pitcher now? you know what I mean? Which I've always found fascinating because Babe Ruth, you know, obviously, you know, historically one of the greatest baseball players that's ever played the game, and he played a bunch of different positions and, you know, known not only for just all the home runs, but he was a pitcher as well. Like, you don't see that anymore. Like, you don't see pitchers don't do that. That's not what, you know. That's why there's a designated hitter. So, which I hate, by the way. I'm one of those people that hate the designated hitter. I hate it. All right, let's get back to some of these terms. Here's one, another one that I can't believe is 100 years old. Fanboy. This term for a boy or man who is extremely or overly enthusiastic fan of something or someone predates our internet-fueled obsession with celebrities. The female equivalent, fangirl, didn't roll around until 1934. I cannot believe that fanboy is 100 years old. I mean, I would have thought the term was like 20 years old, you know,
right?
With the internet and everything, but wow, 100 years old. How about this golden retriever? These very good golden boys were first bred in Scotland in 1865. A breeder mated a yellow retriever with a tweed water spaniel. And their offspring became a new breed of dog that would later be called the Golden Retriever. That's where the Golden Retriever came from. That's 100 years old. Here's one, 100 years old jigsaw puzzle. According to the online etymology dictionary, the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle were cut with a vertical reciprocating saw called a jigsaw in the early 1900s, hence the name jigsaw puzzle. Before that, they were known as dissected maps or dissected pictures. So it's actually named after the saw. I didn't know that. So that's where the jigsaw puzzle comes in. That's really interesting. Dissected maps. That sounds like fun. Hey, honey. You want to put together a dissected map? Man, oh man. How about this one? Out gas. No, this doesn't refer to a farting contest, but rather the removal of gases from a material or space, usually by heating. Out gas. Okay, phooey. What in tarnation? This interjection used to express disgust has probably been in use before your grandpa was born. Some other fun synonyms include faw, few, yick, and rats. Phooey's a good one. All right, how about this? Putz. Putsch. We can thank the Swiss-German language for this word, also known as a coup d'etat. It refers to a secretly plotted and suddenly executed attempt to overthrow a government. All right. A few more of these words, if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll come back and get to your texts and calls at 312-981-7200 and much more after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's 2 for Tuesday. Give me a 2 for Tuesday! Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. 301 area code, requesting Chicago. Does anybody really know what time it is? And we're back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m., and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. That's coming up, too. We've been talking about words and phrases that are 100 years old this year, and some of them I can't believe were around in 1919. How about skivvies? Anybody ever say skivvies?
I've used it once or twice.
Have you? If you're looking to spice up your vocabulary, swap out underpants for skivvies. According to one newspaper article in 1927, this word started out as U.S. Navy slang. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I thought it came from, the skivvies. I wonder if people still use that term. I like that word. I think skivvies is a pretty cool, funny word. All right, how about this? Snooty. Snobby is a slightly older term, having first been documented in 1846, but snooty also gets the point across. If you don't like either of those, try snotty, potty, or the chiefly British term, toffee-nosed. Toffee-nosed has been used frequently in Python routines. That's the only reason that I know toffee-nosed. It's been in Python, and you know, I sort of enjoy British comedy, and I've heard toffee-nosed many times as an insult. And I'm trying to remember what, there's a specific Python, pretty famous Python sketch, where it's used as part of like this rant, and I think is it Michael Palin or is it no, it's probably John. Maybe John Cleese used it on Fawlty Towers. Maybe it was one of Basil's insane rants on Fawlty Towers. So, Dan, did you ever watch Fawlty Towers?
No, I haven't seen an episode.
Oh, it's the best. It's really, truly one of the greatest shows of all time. And, man, it's funny. It's just, and Cleese is amazing on it. He's unbelievable. But, yeah, toffee-nosed. How about super pimp? This word is exactly what you'd expect, a very successful pimp. How one defines success of this nature is another question entirely. Wait a minute. In 1919, they were using the word super pimp? What? See, this is amazing to me. That super pimp is a term that's been around for 100 years. How is that even remotely possible? Jeez. All right, how about this? Xanadu. It's been around 100 years. Long before Xanadu was an awesomely terrible movie starring Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly, it meant an idyllic, exotic, or luxurious place. Samuel Taylor Coleridge's 1816 poem Kubla Khan refers to a place called Xanadu, and his rich imagery fired public imagination and ultimately contributed to the transition of Xanadu from a name to a generalized term for an idyllic place. Merriam-Webster notes it also happened to be the name of Charles Foster Kane's fictional estate in Citizen Kane. That's true. Yeah, it's really crazy about that. You know, everybody talks about the movie Xanadu, which was just completely ridiculous. Gene Kelly, Olivia Newton-John on roller skates and stuff. It came out in early 1980. And it's I mean, it's just an, have you seen clips from Xanadu ever, Dan?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly unbelievable. I paid money to see that movie in the theater. Now here's the part of the movie that just kills me. Is that there's an actor in it named, his name is Michael Beck. All right? And that was his follow-up to being the lead warrior in The Warriors. Like, he's a total badass. He's Swan in The Warriors. Total Michael Beck. Total badass in The Warriors. Like, and then he's running around wearing, you know, bad clothes and, you know, he's got bell bottoms. Yeah, he's wearing bell bottoms, and I'm skating around singing bad songs. And I remember seeing it because this was about a year after Warriors came out, maybe less than a year after the Warriors came out. And I remember sitting in the theater going, "What are you doing? You're Swan from the Warriors. Why are you here? Why are you even participating in this?" It was a tough go for fans of the Warriors, I got to say. And what the hell was I watching where they showed clips from it? I was just watching something where they were showing clips from Xanadu. I was watching something on TV. What was I watching? I can't remember. But they clips playing from Xanadu. And there's Michael Beck. It was where they actually mentioned Michael Beck. They said it was a movie about making movies. It was a movie about making TV or movies because they actually mentioned Michael Beck by name and say, "We want to cast this Michael Beck." Oh my God, I can't believe it. I have the worst memory in the world. Oh, look at that. It's our friend Bill from Central Continental Bakery. Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Hey, what's going on?
I don't know. Nothing much. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Shame about the Bears. And I just wanted to tell you, the Monty Python that you're talking about is The Argument. I think it's Graham Chapman and John Cleese. And Graham Chapman comes in and John Cleese says, he starts saying insulting things. I used to know it by heart.
Doesn't he say toffee-nosed pervert?
Right.
Yeah.
But I'll get to that. I don't know that whole thing. But anyway, he sits down, I think it's Graham Chapman,
Bill, it's the Argument Clinic, right? That's Palin.
Right.
That's Palin. That's not Graham Chapman. That's Palin.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know the thing I'm talking about. And he says, "Is this the 5-minute argument?"
Yeah.
And he says, "No, I think I'll go for the whole full half hour." And so John Cleese was just insulting him. And he's like, "That's not an argument. Sure, yeah. This, that, and the other." And they're like going back and forth. And he says, "Your kind really makes me puke. You blah, blah, blah. I can't remember all the words.
Yeah,
blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Mellow face pervert or something." And he goes, "What?" You know, or something.
That's it.
And then he goes into getting hit on the head lessons.
Right.
After that,
right. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I love that stuff. I lived by it for years.
Yeah, me too. All right, Bill.
Anyway,
thanks, man. I'll see you on Punchki Day.
Probably.
All right.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks.
All right, man. Take care. There you go, Bill from Central Continental Bakery, where we get our Punchkis every year. Punchki Day is coming up. What are we about? Is Easter later this year? Because it was really early last year. Easter was wasn't it really early last year, like in early March or something?
Mid March. I want to say Fat Tuesday / Ash Wednesday was Valentine's Day.
I think you're right. I just remember it being really early last year. So, but we always, that's one of the, as I've mentioned before, one of the many advantages to working this shift is we get the punchkis before anybody else does in this station, and they are the freshest because they come directly from the bakery.
April 20th this year for Easter.
April 20th for Easter, so Lent will be in March then?
March 6th, yeah.
March 6th. Okay, so that'll be Fat Tuesday leading into Ash Wednesday. But we usually get them the day before that, right? Don't they usually come in the day? A few days before. All right, so early March, beginning of March, we'll get some punchkis. All right, let's take a break, everybody, and then we're going to come back and talk more words. These are 15 words that aren't as straightforward as you think. More talk of phrases and words. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News right after this. Man, I haven't heard this song in years. Carly Simon, Michael in Iowa, requesting Carly Simon with You Belong to Me. Yeah, man, it's two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about products that you didn't think would be obsolete and much more. We have a Blackhawks Express to play. Another not good one, but we will play it back. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us for talk and text. Nick DiGilio here until 5 a.m. in the Allstate Skyline studio. So we were just talking about more. We got more words here to talk about. Let's see. There's an old wives' tale that says the step and stepmother and stepfather refers to the fact that they're added on to the charts one step away from the biological ones. So the genealogical charts that are added to, unfortunately, that's completely untrue. Despite appearances, the step in those words stems from the old English term steep, which is to indicate loss or bereavement. Way back then, stepchild or stepchild meant orphan, not just offspring of a second spouse. Here are 15 more words whose true origin doesn't and meanings aren't quite as straightforward as they seem. First one is quicksand. The quick in quicksand doesn't mean fast. Remember we were talking about quicksand, Dan? About how it was like a thing and it just doesn't happen anymore?
Right.
And, you know, I was talking about how when I was a kid, it was in cartoons, it was in adventure shows, it was in TV, it was in movies. Like, quicksand was like, oh, no, you're walking through the jungle, and then all of a sudden you're sinking, you're in quicksand. And does that just, you know, did we ever discover whether quicksand just doesn't exist anymore, or it's just not represented as well as it used to be in the entertainment industry?
I believe it's just the representation, because I was surprised that there was, like, articles and articles dedicated to what you're describing.
To quicksand.
Yeah, and its use in film and
yeah, you know, I mean, it TV. Was, I mean, no, it was a thing. I mean, it was a fear. You know, it was so ubiquitous that, you know, kids my age watching, you know, movies or cartoons or adventure shows or something like that would be like, oh, no, it's quicksand. Like, it was like a thing. It was a thing that freaked you out. And it was a cliche. It got to the point where it's a cliche. Like, you couldn't make a movie that took place like, you know, somebody's trekking through the jungle. Then you can't do an adventure show or something like that where someone's going through like the jungle or the forest or something and comes across you have to have a scene with quicksand and someone being rescued from quicksand. Is there quicksand in any of the Indiana Jones movies? I don't think there are. I don't think there is in the first one. But I mean that you would see because that's the kind of. Those are the kind of movies that, you know, the Indiana Jones movies are, you know, obviously inspired by the old serials. And quicksand was a staple in those things. So I'm surprised that, you know.
According to Indiana Jones Wikipedia, in 1936, Indiana Jones and Marion Ravenwood got trapped in quicksand while fleeing crocodiles in Africa. They were rescued by a Nazi SS colonel disguised as a doctor.
What? Does it? Wait a minute, then.
And then
he said, "Him and he and Marion."
Marianne Ravenwood. Yeah.
So that's Karen Allen. Wait a minute. Maybe it was in the fourth one. In the piece of crap that came up.
Yes, yes.
Because I was going to say there's no scene like that in. So that's the Skull movie, Shia LaBeoufy.
Yes, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
See, that's why I don't remember it. that's why I have no memory of them because it was in the terrible Indiana Jones movie. So, but see, I told you there has to be you can't make adventure movies from that era without having quicksand. I will say this though. You know, I'm about to read what quicksand, you know, the quick and quicksand doesn't mean fast. It always seemed to me in these movies, it always took a while. It never seemed very quick.
Good morning.
Your mic's on, Dan. It never seemed quick. You know, it was scary because you're getting sucked into the earth, but it wasn't like you got dragged down, you know, whipped underneath the earth. It took a while to sink in quicksand. So that's why I always thought the name was a little bit weird, because it's not quicksand, it's slow sand. I mean, but again, it's terrifying because if it, like your arms sometimes, you know, like there would be quicksand where you couldn't move your arms, like if you had your arms at your sides, like once your wrists sunk into the quicksand, you couldn't move them, so you just would sink straight down. It took a while, but you could sink straight down. But anyway, the quick in quicksand doesn't mean fast. Despite what you might think about the stuff sucking people into their deaths before they have time to escape, the word isn't a synonym for speedy. Doesn't mean fast. Doesn't mean fast in the word quicksilver, an old name for mercury either. Instead, these adjectives both mean alive or living. A reference to the moving animated ground in a patch of quicksand, and the fact that quicksilver is a liquid that can move and be poured. So that's pretty cool. It means live sand. That makes more sense than quicksand. Living sand, that makes more sense than quicksand. Because like I said, it's not quick. I really think we need to bring quicksand back as a regular thing in movies. I don't know about you, but I miss quicksand. Let's see. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, evening, Nick. And first off, Happy New Year's. I didn't get to call you earlier in the year.
Same to you.
When I was in the Army Reserves, I was a combat engineer with combat heavy equipment operators. We built roads, blew up buildings and stuff. But
yeah.
We were over at Indiana at Camp Atterbury building a road on their post for them, and the old guys around there, you know, the old guys that worked on post said, "Yeah, there's quicksand out here, so you guys be careful." And we all thought, "Yeah, right." Well, we were working on the road, and it was time to take a break for lunch, so we guys stopped the dozer and got off it, and we went underneath the shade tree, and we looked over, and next thing you know, the dozer is sinking.
Oh, no!
And it got up to the top of the running boards before we could get cables and stuff hooked onto it to drag it out, but it took, like, 9 other bulldozers to pull it out.
Wow.
And then I live out west of Chicago, and out west there's a little town, Ashton, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And grandparents used to say that out in some of the fields around there, they had lost teams of horses to what they believed was quicksand. They'd just be out there plowing away with their team of horses, and all of a sudden, boom, they're gone.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of weird, but you don't hear about it that much. But, you know, I guess it happens in it'd have to be a sandy area, which
sure.
Every military post on in the United States is built on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always use the worst ground around. So, but yeah, that was kind of freaky to watch a bulldozer just sitting there and all of a sudden just start sinking.
That's crazy. That's really crazy, yeah. Man. That is really crazy. Well, see, it's a real scary thing, quicksand.
Yeah, you know, you don't know what to do. Do you run? Do you know, how far out does it go, you
right,
know?
Right, right. Wow. All right. Wow, well, Rich, that's a hell of a story.
Yeah, but it would have been neat if Tarzan would have swung out of a tree and grabbed us like we do on the TV.
Exactly,
you know?
Right. Swinging on a vine comes in, grab him, he'll pull you out of the quicksand. Everything will be fine.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Thank you, Rich.
Right. Have a good evening.
All right, yep, take bye. Care. All right. I think living sand is better. That makes it even sound creepier. There's a very funny quicksand scene in Blazing Saddles. All right, but quick in quicksand doesn't mean fast. How about this? The lolly in lollipop doesn't mean lollying. The old story that the word refers to popsicles and icicles that droop as they melt isn't true. In fact, the lolly is an old English dialect term for the tongue. Oh, well, see, now that makes sense. A tongue pop. That's what it is. The mid in midwife does not mean middle. For that matter, the wife in midwife doesn't mean, well, wife. The word wife originally meant woman, while mid stood for with, making midwife a woman who is literally with a woman as she gives birth. Okay, that makes sense. The wilder in wilderness does not mean wild. At least not in the sense of the woods and wilds. The wilder is a corruption of the old English wild doer or wild deer or animal, which you would definitely find in the wilderness. All right. The cut in cutlet doesn't mean trimmed. This prefix has nothing to do with cutlets being cut from a larger joint of meat. In this case, cutlet descends from the French word castellet, which means little rib. I always thought cutlet meant that it was cut from a bigger piece of meat. See how stupid I am? The bell in belfry does not mean bell. A belfry isn't necessarily a bell tower. The original belfry was actually a mobile siege tower that could be wheeled up to castles and town walls by invading armies to gain access from the outside. In that sense, the word derives from Burgfrit, which is the old Germanic name of a piece of equipment. So it derives from that, belfry. And if you have bats in the belfry, you're nuts. See, we talked about that earlier.
All comes together.
Combining the two. All right, let's take a quick break here. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and for text. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. It continues, 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. Get your request in. We'll play them in a little bit. It's Michael in Iowa requesting Carly Simon. That's Haven't Got Time for the Pain. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday morning. And, yeah, we've been talking about the origins of some words. We were talking about words that are 100 years old, and now we're talking about 15 words that aren't as straightforward as they look. Sometimes they mean something else than the obvious. And if you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. How about this? The ham and hamburger doesn't mean meat. The beginning of the word has nothing to do with meat of any kind. You probably know that one already. Hamburgers are people or things that come from Hamburg, Germany. Knew that one. That one I knew. Unless you have a burger made out of ham. You can grind up some ham and make a burger out of it and have a ham hamburger. The Jerusalem in Jerusalem artichoke doesn't refer to the city. The adjective for this unassuming tuber is a corruption with the word Italian word for sunflower, which is girasol. Jerusalem artichoke is not an artichoke. It's actually a member of the sunflower family. It's also called a sunchoke or a sunroot. I've never heard of it. I've heard sunchoke. I've never heard. Have you ever heard Jerusalem artichoke?
I have not.
Sunchoke is what I've heard it referred to as. The piggy in piggyback does not mean pig. Piggyback is believed to be a corruption of a pick-a-pack or pick-pack. A 16th century expression for carrying something on your shoulders. It might derive from the old use of pick to mean pitch and pack meaning a sack or a satchel. What's that tongue twister? Pick a peck of pickle
peppers.
Pick. Peter picked. Oh, Peter picked a peck. Peter picked a pick a. Picked a peck of peedle. I better stop while I'm ahead because I might say something that just slips out that I just don't want to say.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Is that where that comes from, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. How many pickles did Peter Piper pick? There's that, because it goes on. I think it's longer than just that.
Right.
It goes on. Were you ever good at those things, those tongue twisters?
No, I was
things?
Awful.
Oh, my God. I can't. Me neither.
Especially the Sandy by the Seashore.
Selling seashells?
I believe so, yes.
So she sells seashells by the seashore. Yeah. You know, that those are like, Dan, you know, I did theater for a while here in Chicago. And there were actors who would do their vocal warm-ups with those things. You know? Like in Anchorman. In Anchorman, when Ron Burgundy is warming up before they go on air, it's that kind of thing. You do the... where you get your lips all loose and everything, and the vocal exercises. It does help. You look foolish, but it does help. But I don't know if I've ever did the tongue twister thing. I'm not a good actor. I just didn't care. I mean, half the stuff that I was in, I wrote, and I wrote the stuff based on me. So it would be easy for me to just go on stage and go, yeah, whatever. It's me. All right. How about this? The sand and sand blind doesn't refer to the beach. Sand blind is a 15th century word seldom encountered today outside of literature and poetry for being half blind. It is often said to allude to the poor visibility experienced during dust storms or sandstorms, but it's simpler than that. Sand blind derives from its Old English equivalent, Sam blind, the Sam of which means the same as semi does today. Oh, that does make sense. The curry in curry flavor doesn't mean stew. Curry favor doesn't mean stew. It's an old myth that currying favor with someone alludes to slowly working your way back into the social circle, just as the flavors in a curry or stew mingle together as it cooks. Wow, that's pretty cool. I wish that was the actual reason. Instead, the true story behind this one is more peculiar, even more peculiar. In this case, curry derives from a Middle English word meaning to groom a horse. What? While favor is a corruption of favel, the name of a chestnut-colored horse that appeared in an old French poem and folktale about a horse that wanted to usurp its master and take over his kingdom. Never had that kind of experience with horses before, Dan. They were always very kind to me.
Yeah, you know.
They never tried to usurp me and take over my kingdom.
As far as you know.
Oh, it's true. They could have been planning something.
Right. I mean, you were only, what, eight, six, wasn't you?
I was young, yeah. I've been on a horse as an adult, but the last time I was actually, did the horse equestrian stuff, it was probably 10, 11.
Was it like riding a bike when you rode the horse as an adult? Or did you,
oh, yeah, 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 yeah. You know what is
equestrian training?
I will tell you what it ruined for me. Horseback trail riding.
Mm.
It ruined it for me because, I actually rode a horse for real. You know, when you go on these trails and it's just a line of horses with their noses in the next horse's butt, and you're just clump, clink, clump down a trail that they've gone down 9,000 times, and they're depressed because they're in a really crappy stable and they're probably not being fed well or taken care of the way they should be taken care of. That's not, I have news for you. That's not horseback riding. Horseback riding's entirely, that's an entirely different thing. And I remember, I'll never forget this. I was like, I hadn't been on a horse in a couple of years. Two, 3 years, I hadn't been on a horse. We were at a campsite that offered horseback riding, like a horseback trail. And I was like, oh, I haven't been on a horse in a while. This will be fun. And so we go, and then it's, you know, and I'm like, what is this? I wanted to break out of the trail and just, you know, haul ass on the horse.
Right.
So I haven't been on a horse, and I haven't been on a horse in many, 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 many years. But, you know, and I probably should just start out with the trail now, because considering how screwed up my body is at this point, and the kind of shape I'm in, I've been thrown from a horse.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. More than once. Yeah, more than once. And I still love them. I know Esmeralda hates them. What did she say? They have, like, human eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's right. Every time we talked about horses, we would bring up that scene from The Ring where the horse is on the ferry and it goes nuts and jumps over, which is the only, to me, the only scary scene in that. I don't like The Ring, but to me, the only scary scene in that movie, and it really freaks me out. That really freaked me out. But yeah, no, I've been thrown. But yeah, I remember when we went camping, man. I was like, oh, this is gonna be great. We're gonna go horseback riding. Good dirk, good dirk, good dirk. This is fun. All right, let's take a break. We've got more origins of weird words and stuff. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. 2 for Tuesday continues. We're here till 5. It's 312-981-7200. Canadian Bill is 2 for Tuesday request. April Wine with Weeping Widow. The lead singer got his favorite guitar back recently after it was stolen 46 years ago. What? How did that happen? How did he get his guitar back after 46 years? What? Did somebody, yeah, I took it 46 years ago. I felt bad about it, so I'm going to give it back to you now. That's weird. All right. April Wine. We'll hear another song by April Wine a little bit later on. Perhaps somebody got, the drummer got his drum kit back after 57 years. I don't know. We have not finished Curry Favor because I got all sidetracked. By the way, Dan, I can't remember the name of the stable that I used to train at. The equestrian center stable. I want to say it was the northwest suburbs. It was near, I want to say it was not far from like Norwich. It was in that area. I want to say like a forest preserve drive kind of a thing. And we used to actually, when we would go out and ride horses and stuff like that, when we would just like ride slow, we would cross that forest preserve drive or whatever that road was. But it was like, I want to say like northwest, maybe northwest side, still in Chicago, but near something like Norwich or one of those northwest.
Happy Day Stables.
Yeah, where's that?
It was in Norwich, Illinois.
That's it. That's got to be it then. What did it have a? Does it have an address or did it?
It's got its own Facebook group, but that's about it.
Okay, that's probably what. That's probably where I went. Happy Day Stables. That's probably where I went. It was in Norwich. Yeah, that sounds right. But anyway, we got a little sidetracked here. Okay, now in this case, curry means it's a Middle English word to groom a horse, while favor is a corruption of favel, the name of a chestnut-colored horse that appeared in an old French poem and folktale about a horse who wanted to usurp its master and take over his kingdom. In the tale, Favel succeeds in his quest and ends the story by being fawned over and curried by all the members of his master's court. Currying favor literally means sycophantically grooming a chestnut horse. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. The face in shame-faced doesn't mean visage. Shame-faced was originally shame-fast, with fast in the sense meaning fixed or constant. as in steadfast or stuck fast. Presumably the word changed over time because the shame of a shame-faced person can be seen on his or her expression. So it was shame fast. The chalk and chalk full does not mean a wedge or block. The chalk full, being chalk full has nothing to do with being rammed as tightly into a chalk or below a door or the wheels of a vehicle. Instead, chalk in this context is derived from choke, the sense that something being suffocated or crammed or crowded. So basically that coffee brand is, what are you, you're choking the nuts? Chock full of nuts? And by the way, that's a brand name I've never understood. It's coffee, right? And there are no nuts in coffee. Coffee, they're beans, right?
They are beans, yes.
They're not nuts. They're not legumes. I don't understand chock full of nuts. I've never understood it. Never understood it. That's my parents' go-to brand of coffee, too. They love the chock full of nuts. That's also the coffee shop in Escape from New York, where Snake Plissken meets the girl that and eventually gets killed and drugged down by the crazies into the hole of the floor. And he's in a chock full of nuts coffee store. And oh, another little piece of trivia: that actress in the chock full of nuts in Escape from New York is Susan Hubley, who at the time was Kurt Russell's wife.
Since we're talking about fun etymology types of things, chock full of nuts.
Okay.
1926, William Black opened his first nut shop on Broadway and 43rd Street. 1932, chock full of nuts coffee shops were born. After the Depression struck, even William Black's shelled nuts seemed too much of a luxury, so he converted his chain of 18 nut shops into small coffee shops, selling a good cup of coffee and a sandwich for a nickel.
But he never changed the name.
Never changed the name.
Because it did start out as a nut shop. Oh, all right. All right, well, now I understand. See, the D in D-Day does not stand for disembarkment. Disembarkment. It also doesn't mean deliverance, Deutschland, doomsday, decision, or any other of the D words that are popular in history that you might believe. In fact, the D doesn't stand for anything. D-Day is an alternative placeholder used during the planning of Normandy's landings for the unspecified day on which the operation would take place. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Oh. Let's see. The good and goodbye does not mean good. Goodbye is a contraction of God be with you, an expression of departure or best wishes in use in English from the medieval period. As the phrase simplified over time, God drifted toward good in other similar expressions like good day and good morning. By the late 16th century, we were left with the word that we use today, which is goodbye. So that comes from God be with you. I think I knew that. I think I knew that one. So, all right, not as straightforward. I still think we need to bring quicksand back. Needs to be a staple in adventure films again. Once again, I think we're missing something. If you have any thoughts on any of this stuff, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here is Dwayne on WGN. Hi, Dwayne.
Good morning. That's... stable you're talking about was on the east side of Cumberland Avenue, north of Forest Preserve Drive, and it's been gone 20, maybe 30 years. I think there's a restaurant there now or something.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where it was, Dwayne. That's exactly the place. That is, without question, the place where I went. Yeah, and I'm there's probably like a Red Lobster or something there now. So.
No, it's south of the Red Lobster. Oh, I know what the Red Lobster you're talking about.
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
All right,
Dwayne, thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right, see ya. No, that's definitely it. Cumberland by near Forest Preserve Drive. Yeah. I forgot it was called Happy Time Stables. Well, I did have a happy time.
How often did you go?
Once a week? Maybe. A couple times a week, once a week, yeah.
And I know we poked fun at you, but did you have your own horse that you regularly ride?
Yes.
Or was it Buttercup or something?
No. It wasn't Buttercup. It was Thunder, actually.
That was it.
I mean, you know, it wasn't my horse, but it was the one that I liked the most that I got. You know, this is a true thing, and I know that people, you know, you got to get along with the horse that you're going to ride. You have to. You know, it's funny, you know, Jeff Bridges just got the Irving Thalberg Award, or not the Irving Thalberg Award, got the Cecil B. DeMille Award for Lifetime Achievement. And of course, his acceptance speech was just fantastic. And you know, Jeff Bridges being the coolest dude on the planet and my favorite actor of all time. And it was just fantastic. I watched his acceptance speech at least three times already, the Golden Globes the other night. In his acceptance speech for this Lifetime Achievement Award, Dan, he named and thanked his stand-in. Now, I've never, you know, who does that? Only Jeff Bridges, you know. We've made 60 films together. 60 films. He's worked on 60 films with this guy. And he's like, this is the through line to my career. But he also, who was it that thanked his horse? Somebody just won an award and thanked his horse, and it was the same horse. This is one of those horses that's used on movie sets that's really well behaved, not a maniac. Because a lot of horses, you know, a lot of crazy stuff happens on movie sets, and of course, if you're shooting a Western and you've got gunshots going off, the horses don't like that. But he thanked his horse, and I can't remember who it was. An actor thanked his horse, and it was this. Oh, Jeff Daniels! Jeff Daniels, when he won an Emmy for the Western that he did on Netflix. So Jeff Daniels thanked his horse, and it was the same horse that Jeff Bridges had in True Grit. The same horse, and Jeff Bridges is thanking his stand-in. And Jeff Daniels is thanking his horse. You got to love both those guys, man. But yeah, a lot of those, it was going back. I think we talked about this before. We were talking about how famous animals, appear in so many movies. Like, I think a gorilla, right? Or
the bear.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, whatever the bear's name. Max. Is it Max the bear? Or
let me check.
Not Billy Bear. No, Billy Bear's a character in 48 Hours. That's right. No, but anyway, that bear was in everything. And then I believe, like, didn't the bear's spawn also become a famous?
Bart the Bear.
Bart the Bear. And then it was like Bart Jr. or
Bart,
something?
Yeah, Bart the Bear 2.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, so Jeff Daniels and Jeff Bridges shared the same horse, and I can't remember the name of the Western that the TV show that Jeff Daniels was on, but it was the same horse that that Bridges had in True Grit. So, hey, you know when Clint Eastwood, still to this day, he does not say action on his set. You know, and I mean, you know, Clint, you know, like let's just shoot it once, and then I want to golf, but. But he does not yell action. His sets are very, very quiet. And he just goes, okay, go ahead. And then, they roll. He's like, roll? Okay, go ahead. And the reason why he does that is because all the Westerns he made, somebody would yell action, it would spook the horses. So he does that because even if there's no, he hasn't made a movie with a horse in it in a long time, you know. But even if he's making, like, you know, I mean, he just did The Mule. And there's no horses in that. Well, it's called The Mule, but that's sort of he's a lot of driving, and there's a lot of domestic stuff in it and stuff. But he never yells action. Every single person who's ever worked with Clint Eastwood is like, sometimes I don't know whether we're actually rolling or not because he's so quiet. And that's because, and he said it in interviews. He's like, I got sick and tired of being thrown from horses, and you know the horses being spooked, and then we have to wait another 20 minutes for the horses to calm down to try to do the thing again, and then they'd yell action again, and the horse would go nuts. So that's why he doesn't say action on his sets, because it spooks the, and his, he goes, I don't say action on my sets because it spooks the horses. Even though there's no horses in the movie. That's what he says. All right. We got to break here for some weather. And then we're going to talk about some products that some products that you didn't ever thought would be obsolete. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Canadian Bill with our next Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. It's Tuesday. 312-981-7200. Canadian Bill, April Wine with The Whole World's Going Crazy. Oh, it's all crazy. Right here on WGN. And, yes, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. All right. So, you know, times change. And we move along, and, you know, technology changes a lot of things. And, you know, Dan, we still... we have to do that topic about the sounds that young people won't recognize. Remember, we were going to do that?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, didn't we have a guest? You were going to try and get a guest for that? Wasn't there somebody from a museum or something that was going to...
Oh, yeah. They don't speak English very well. They're
English.
Oh,
okay.
So that's why that didn't work out. But yeah, they have a museum of forgotten sounds, I believe is what it's called.
Yeah, Museum of Forgotten Sounds, which is kind of what we're talking about, you know, similar to what we're talking about here. We like to get nostalgic on this show. At least I do. And I know you guys, you know, always usually love to call in or text in. With, you know, topics about like, hey, you remember this thing or you remember that thing and I miss this thing and I'm better and I think we're better off without that thing. I like getting nostalgic on the show and talking about old neighborhoods and what used to be there and stuff like that. It's just fun to talk about that. And having, you know, lived in this city my entire life, it's a lot of fun to just go back and revisit places that are completely different than they used to be when I was a kid. But here we have products that you never thought would be obsolete. This is from Cheapism. Is that a website, Dan? Cheapism.com?
Yep.
What do they do on Cheapism?
They do stuff like this. They, you know, things with a kind of combining this with financial, you know, how it relates to the financial terms of things. Because a lot of this, as we'll read, talks about, all right, well, it was, you know, eventually subsumed by this technology
right.
or this company that is now, you know, a world moneymaker.
Right. All right, how about this? Here's a product that's obsolete. Alarm clocks. I don't have an alarm. I mean, does my clock radio count as an alarm clock?
In this case, they do not count it.
Okay. It's like the actual wind-up right, alarm clock that, that ding, 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 that thing. Okay. Because I know that, like, maybe a lot of people don't use alarm clocks, so most people use their phone. And my clock radio on the bedstand next to my bed... That's my backup alarm. I set that one a few minutes later. My phone is the first alarm. So I know most people use their phones. But it says, invented in China in the year 725, Yi Xing invented the first known alarm clock, and the descendants of his contraption have been startling slumberers out of dreams ever since. It was actually the rise of the clock radio that spelled the beginning of the end of the standalone alarm clock. But in the end, it was cell phones that rendered the single-function timed noisemaker a relic of a bygone era. Yeah, the good old wind-up alarm clock. I wonder if people still have those. And by the way, if you do, like, as we go through these products that are essentially obsolete now that nobody ever uses, if you have them, we would love to hear from you via talk or text at 312-981-7200. And do you still use them? Like, does somebody really have one of those old school wind up alarm clocks? You know, with the two bells on top and the clanger that goes. Yeah. All right. How about encyclopedias? In 2010, the Encyclopedia Britannica published its final print edition. For some reason, that makes me really sad. It was a massive 32-edition collection that followed in the footsteps of the 7 million similar sets purchased by academics, students, and hobbyists throughout the company's 244-year history. Encyclopedia met its demise in the form of the Internet, which offered knowledge at the click of a button. Let's see. Dan, did you have a set of encyclopedias? You did when you were growing up, right?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah. I used to love them, man. I just, you know, pull a volume off and just like kind of like look through it. You remember that scene in Say Anything where he's in her room and they're and she's changing and she's got this giant dictionary and he's like, wow, this is a monster dictionary. And then she's like, yeah, I love it. I always mark off the words that I look up. And he opens it up and on every page there's like 50 words that have been marked. Oh, man. Linda's on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Your alarm clock, this morning I used it as a backup because I'm taking my girlfriend for surgery, mm-hmm. and I had to get up at 3:30. And just in case there's a power outage or that, and it's important, I use a backup alarm clock. This one has a battery, but I'm looking for the old-fashioned key wine, and sometimes in these little magazines I get in the mail, they'll have a baby bin or a big bin that you can order.
Yeah, Linda, not meant to be ironic, but you can probably find that on the internet. You can probably find it on the internet.
I don't have an internet.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains why you have an alarm clock like that, then.
And you were talking about encyclopedias?
Yeah.
I think one set is in the attic that my mom and dad had bought us kids, but we had used my aunt's for many years when we were growing up. And in there, they had sections to where you could look up poems, limericks, and different things like that. And I remember in the one section, they had the Hiawatha poem.
Ah, yeah.
And you cannot find those unless you go in. Well, now you guys go to the internet, but even at the library, you go and you have to ask for specific things like that.
Yeah,
but the alarm clock, people will say, oh, I had power outage, and you know, this is a backup.
Yeah. Just okay, Linda. Case. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Sure, take care.
Here's the thing about, you know, the power outage is always something that you should be concerned about, but if your phone's charged, you're okay. that's the thing. You know, you could have a power outage. But if your phone is fully charged, and I always make sure my phone is like almost completely charged when I go to bed. But yeah, that makes sense. If you don't have the internet, you don't want to have that, you know, you got your little wind up alarm clock. That's pretty cool. And there used to be these encyclopedias that you would get, Dan, with when you would go to Jewel and buy a certain amount of groceries, you can come back and get another volume. So, like, I don't know if it was every month or every couple of weeks, they would release a new volume alphabetically. And it wasn't Encyclopedia Britannica. It was a much, you know, smaller, thinner encyclopedia. I don't even know what it was, a small company. But I used to love those things. We would go shopping at the Jewels, and then I would come home with a new copy of a new encyclopedia. And again, it wasn't a badass encyclopedia like Britannica. It was some offshoot company. And it was probably, and if I remember correctly, it was probably mostly pictures, which is probably why I liked it the most. All right, we got a break here. We're talking about products you never thought would be obsolete, and that we'll continue that after the news, which is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, and Tom requesting Grand Funk Railroad closer to home. I'm your captain. Hey, Dan, can you do me a favor and find Homer Simpson talking about Grand Funk? It's I believe it's on the Homer Palooza. I think it's from the Homer Palooza episode, but it's Homer talking about Grand Funk because the kids in the car don't know who Grand Funk is. He's like he's giving Milhouse and Bart and giving them a ride, and they don't know who Grand Funk is, and Homer can't believe it.
KFSL Fossil 103, classic hits from ABBA to Zeppelin. Come on, land.
Tell him! Mr. Simpson, sir! Can you please change the radio station?
But this is Grand Funk Railroad! You guys back there know Grand Funk, right? Nobody knows the band Grand Funk? The wild shirtless lyrics of Mark Farner? The bong rattling bass of Mel Shocker? The competent drum work of Don Brewer?
There it is.
Oh, man!
The confident drum work of Don Brewer. Every time I hear Grand Funk, I think of that. That's just so funny. All right, we're talking about products that you never thought would be obsolete. We've been talking about alarm clocks and encyclopedias and a bunch of other stuff that'll probably make you a little bit nostalgic and perhaps depressed. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. By the way, if you have any of these items that we're talking about that are mostly considered obsolete, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, Nick. You mentioned the Jewel encyclopedias.
Yeah.
That they gave away. I've got a set in my basement. I don't have one volume because for some reason the Jewel I shopped at back then never got that volume. I'd always look for it. But anyways, I'm getting ready to donate them to the Newberry Library for their fundraiser. So the last week in July, if you want to get it, run and grab it.
Oh, okay. That's where it's going to be, huh? It'll be over at the Newberry. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna donate to the Newberry.
Now, do you, every year.
I got a whole bunch of books we donate every year.
That's good. Good for you, man. Yeah. Now, Bill, do you happen to know the name of the encyclopedia?
No, I don't remember. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay,
it's in the basement, the box, and the artwork boxed up and everything. But
okay.
I know I took them off the shelf.
Yeah.
And because my daughter, she says, oh, I remember using those when I was in school.
Mm.
You know, and she used them in the school. And then also I had a whole set of encyclopedias, but I gave that to my grandson.
Yeah.
But he's got those because they were handed down to me when I was a kid, and my mother and father bought them for my brother and sister and I back in, well, I was the oldest. She bought them back about 1949.
Mm. Wow!
So
all right,
they've been handed down. So
yeah, absolutely. All right, Bill. Thanks. I'll head over.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
Real quick. He was talking about. Of course, I've been visually handicapped all my life, so I went away to a special school in Indiana. And you're talking about size of books. The dictionary, in the Braille edition of a dictionary, it's a standard Webster dictionary. It was 42 volumes of 200 pages apiece.
Oh my God.
And the only trouble was, when I was a kid, there was always a joke about this guy that started to read the dictionary, and the trouble was he couldn't stand reading because the subject kept changing every paragraph.
All right, Bill, have a great morning.
All righty. All
right, take care. By the way, callers and texters are saying it's Funk and Wagnalls. Yeah, that's right. It's also Funk and Wagnalls is also legendary because Funk and Wagnalls is where the questions for Carnac are kept in a mayonnaise drawer, in a mayonnaise jar on the porch of Funk and Wagnalls. That's where the questions for Carnac are kept in a mayonnaise jar, Funk and Wagnalls porch. Since I think what does he say? Since 8 o'clock this morning or something like that, Ed says. Here's Witt on WGN. Hi, Witt.
Hey, what's up, man? Nice, really nice to speak with you this morning.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, listen, I had a set of encyclopedias when I was younger. I was raised by my grandma. We were extremely poor, and the only set of encyclopedias she was to get her hands on was from 1940. So I got a very, very distinguished view of the world from before World War II.
And it was
really cool to read it and see how what people were thinking and the way the world was before then. It was you know, I went through all the lot.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's really interesting to go back and look at that stuff. Anything that you consider maybe like being a part of a time capsule. I mean, that's why they have that stuff. It's awesome.
Right, and the view of Hitler then was totally different than after. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. All right,
all right,
have a good day, buddy.
You too, man.
Take care. Got some texts coming in here. 847 area code says, growing up, I always had a Big Ben wind-up table alarm clock. 218 area code says, Walmart sells alarm clocks with bells on top, only it's run on batteries. I had one for a couple of months, but the thing went through batteries pretty easily, and I had to let it go. 630 says, Menards sells the wind-up clock. 773 area code said, I just ordered the old double bell wind-up clock from Amazon for my husband, who's hard of hearing, and it works great. 773 area code says, I still have my complete Funkin' Wagnalls encyclopedia set, which was purchased at the Jewels. 219 area code says, all alarm clocks that plug into the wall also have a place for a backup 9-volt battery, just in case. Well, that's good. 773 area code says, Nick, the Jewels had the Sesame Street Dictionary. I used to read it to my daughter, and she was reading it on her own by the time she was 4 years old, and today she's a school teacher. Oh, how about that? The Jewels, helping to shape minds. See, JoJo's good, Dan.
Not only does he provide you with food at an affordable price, but he'll educate your kids.
That's what I want for a teacher. I want a guy like JoJo to be my kid's teacher. And a substitute teacher would be Gritty. All right, some other things that you thought would be obsolete. This one depresses the hell out of me, by the way. This one, film. In 1839, Louis-Jean Mandre de Greux shocked the world by freezing a moment in time when he snapped the world's first photograph. Film photography would dominate for more than 150 years, although the first digital camera was created in 1975. The 1999 Kodak DC210 truly signaled the beginning of the digital camera revolution and the beginning of the end for film. In May of 2018, Canon announced that it had finally sold its last film camera 8 years after making them, and it took that long to deplete the unsold inventory. Yeah, that one kind of depresses me. It's convenient as hell to have a camera on your phone and everything, and all this stuff. By the way, I'm guilty of having. it's not like I'm boycotting technology and this affects the movie industry too. And again, digital filming digitally is more convenient. It's quicker. It's cheaper. You can make it look good, but there's nothing like film. And when you see a movie and it's projected and it's actually film and not digital, the difference is kind of like night and day. Which is why everybody should go see Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's movie, at the Music Box. It starts, I believe, on Thursday. And it runs through the weekend. And it was number one. You know, if you were listening yesterday morning, Eric and Colin and I did our year-end reviews with our best and worst movies of 2018. And all three of us, Eric, Colin, and myself, all chose Roma as by far the best film of last year, of 2018. And it's available on Netflix. Again, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about. You can watch it on Netflix. But the proper way to see this movie will be when they project it in 70 millimeter at the Music Box. And so I highly recommend people go check that out. All right, let's take another break here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we're talking about products we never thought would be obsolete and reminiscing a little bit about that. And Funkin' Wagnalls. 312-981-7200. Here's the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, rain mixes with snow showers and flurries with a high around 43. Tonight, brisk, colder, chance of flurries, low around 22. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and a high of 26. Thursday, partly cloudy and a high near 28. Friday, cloudy, high near 34. It's currently 38 degrees at O'Hare. It's 39 at Midway, 39 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a quick break and come back with more right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Two for Tuesday continuing. Give me a two for Tuesday! One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Tom, with Grand Funk Railroad and them, we're an American band. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we're talking about products that you never thought would be obsolete. And some of these make me a little sad. All right, how about this? Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. How you doing?
All right.
It's a cool topic, so I thought I'd chime in. And when I was a little kid, I was obsessed with, like, really small technology. and I was especially obsessed with Dick Tracy's wristwatch, the TV wristwatch, because I thought that was really cool because it's really small and I can watch it in bed, you know, if it was on my wrist. Well, they didn't have those things back in the 70s, but what I did was I saved up my allowance money when I was around 11 or 12, as much as I could, and I ended up buying one of those really small Sony TVs. If you remember that from the mid-early 70s, they were 5 inches or less.
Yeah.
5-inch one I got, and I got like the premium 5-inch one, and it was almost like a perfect cube. It was like a box. It wasn't like oblong, like ice cream sandwich shaped kind of thing. It was like a perfect square, and by today's standards it weighed a ton, but by standards back then you could lift it with your pinky. That was my main TV for most of my life until I, you know, had a living room and all that stuff. But I still was using that TV up until it was on my kitchen table, up until the airways went digital. And the thing still worked, and it was a Sony tube television from way back.
Yeah, wow, and it still worked.
It still works. I still have it, but I can't. It doesn't. It probably would work with a. Well, if you're going to use a VCR with it, but that doesn't apply anymore either.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, it still works.
Wow, that's amazing. That is pretty amazing. See, the old, they don't make them like they used to, Dan. I'm an old man trying to get some wedges.
That's right.
Rich, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What about fax machines? We still have fax machines here. There's one right... Isn't that part... That copier also a fax machine, or am
yes.
I nuts?
No, you're correct.
Right? I can see it right here. Anybody still use them, though? That's the question. It says, it's hard to believe that fax machines have clung to the bottom rung of the office tech ladder for as long as they have. Although facsimile machines aren't quite dead, they are certainly a dying breed, at least compared to the technology's peak of popularity in 1997, when 3.6 million of the loud, bulky machines were sold. Faxing was perfected to near modern standards in the early 1900s, but the technology was so expensive that it was so out of reach for most businesses until the 80s. Today, services like Fax Zero, launched in 2006, allow anyone with an email address and an internet connection to send faxes for free, which doesn't bode well for the future of the fax machine. U.S. sales of fax machines fell by more than half, from $181 million in 2005 to $70 million in 2010. And I'm sure it's even less now. But yeah, we've got a couple of fax machines floating around here. In the office. I wonder how many people use them, though. We should do a poll of people who work here at GN. And when was the last time anybody used the fax machines that are in the office? And who? Well, and also, and then you got to make sure the person on the other end has a fax machine. I used to think it was the coolest thing ever. When I was working at, this place called Cinebooks, which published film annuals every year, and I was a managing editor there. And whenever I would communicate, one of my jobs, Dan, was to assign writers movies to review. And then at the end of the year, they would all be released in an encyclopedia, in a film review encyclopedia. And I worked, that was a great job. I loved that job. And I was only there for about 8 months because Rupert Murdoch sold the damn company. But anyway, so I would communicate with a lot of my writers via fax, and they would fax in their reviews. So the reviews would come via fax, and then we had people type them in, like they actually manually type them into the computer and then edit them. So that's how we got our, that's how we got, this was like, you know, I think maybe email existed. This was 1990. I know we didn't have email then. So it was fax. We would have the reviews come via fax, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. There'd be like 4 pages of typewritten, you know, and then I would hand them to a couple of our editors and go, here you go. And then they would manually type them in and then edit them and then send it, you know, and then, you know, make a hard copy for me to look at again. Yeah, that was fun. And we thought it was the height of technology, man. Seeing paper with, you know, the reviews being spit out. Because, you know, I had I had writers, you know, I had critics that I would assign, I would assign movies to all across the country. So I thought it was like, ooh, this is coming from California. I'm getting this from California. Ooh. Yeah. You remember there's a big plot point in Die Hard 2 that involves a fax machine?
I do not.
Yeah. I'm only the only people that knows Die Hard 2 as well as Die Hard, because I love Die Hard 2. But there's a big, like, big plot point there's a big clue that's solved via fax in Die Hard 2. That's another movie that came out in 1990. I guess that might have been the height right there. Here's Cindy on WGN. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Cindy. Good morning. Good morning. You're talking about old things. I'm pretty old myself, but at any rate, I have several things. I've got my dictionary I bought in segments at the Jewel about 50 years back, and I have a from 1893 Columbian Exposition. I have the hardcover copy of their commemorative book, and it's got all the pictures of all the local people then back, way back.
Wow.
And then I have a copy. It's about 2 foot high and about a foot wide, inch thick. It's all first pages of the Tribune on days when important things happened. And that's something. And then my last one is a catalog. It's about the same size, but it's got all kinds of goofy things in it, from hair curlers to farm equipment to wheelbarrows to stuff like that. And they are very interesting to thumb through.
Yeah, you go back and look at that. It's like going back in time. I wonder if people keep their catalogs, because everything was via catalog at one point. Like somebody bust out the old Sears catalog. Sears in the news. Cindy, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here on WGN. How about typewriters? Now, Dan, did you learn to type on a computer keyboard or a regular typewriter?
I learned to type on a keyboard on a computer, but I did have a typewriter in the house that I used as well before that.
In 2011, the world's last remaining manual typewriter manufacturer closed for good in Mumbai, India. It was the demise of an office and literary icon. Typewriters met their end, however, thanks to the arrival of word processors, followed closely behind by personal computers. That one makes me sad, too.
Although, it's interesting because I had read about this recently, and an 815 text kind of ties into it. They're actually experiencing a little bit of resurgence because they can't be hacked like a computer. So there are certain companies and certain government agencies that use them for that reason. And then 815 texted, and I work for a bank, and we use the fax a lot because it can't be hacked like email.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. And do we have any typewriters in the office?
I know we did for a very long time back in sales at the old building. I don't know if it made it its way over here.
If I remember correctly, it was an electric. It wasn't a manual, obviously. They're not going to have a manual typewriter. I had one. It was a Smith Corona. It had the case that would close. You know what I mean? It had the handle, and you could carry it. That's what my parents got me. I remember they got me that for Christmas, and I taught myself how to type, which is why I type wrong. And I know that you're like, you know, Captain Type, because you're unbelievably fast and good at it, and you do it correctly. I look at the keyboard, and because that's, I was self-taught. I mean, I can type really fast, but I know when I make a mistake, not by looking at the screen, but by going, oh, I think I hit it. And then I look up and see if I made a mistake, and then I look back down. But yeah, I was self-taught. I mean, I knew how to type by the time I got to high school and I didn't take typing. I was going to take typing, but I didn't take it because I'd have to relearn everything. You know what I mean? Like, I had taught myself, and I was already really good at it. I started typing when I was like in seventh grade.
Yeah.
At home, because I liked it, and I would write like movie reviews and type up movie reviews and stuff. And then, like, when I got to high school, obviously I'd have to follow a regular form and learn all over again, so I didn't take typing. So I type like an idiot now, but it was...
I know we got to get to Vic here, but a new wrinkle is a lot of schools are debating whether to teach typing, because soon they believe everything will be voice activated, so you won't need to learn how to type.
God, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, it's 2019, Dan, you know, that's the year Blade Runner took place. So flying cars are coming up. All right. Let's see. By the way, Running Man took place in 2019, too. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it is about this year. But like one of the greatest science fiction movies of all time takes place in this year. That's Blade Runner. So, all right, news is up. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And how are you? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. I'm here every weekday morning till 5 a.m. Real quickly, I just want to mention one more time before the end of the show that I am hosting a screening of Slapshot tonight. And I hope you guys can make it because this is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's one of the funniest movies ever made and by far the best hockey movie ever. It stars Paul Newman. It's a classic, classic movie from 1977. And I'm showing it tonight. The movie starts at 8 o'clock at the AMC Rosemont 18, which is formerly the Movie Co. It's $10 to get in only, and it's and parking is free. But beforehand, if you guys want to have some food, go down a few blocks away to Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is located at the Crown Plaza Hotel, right down the street. Starting at around 6 o'clock, everybody's going to, you know, we're all going to come in, have some food, and they're giving us a great deal. The Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, they're really, really great guys, and the management is great. And we had a great time having a pre-show dinner there last month before Bill Murray's movie Scrooged, and they had so much fun. They want to do it again, even though Slapshot has nothing to do with Bill Murray or the Murray Brothers. It is Caddyshack's a sports movie, and so is Slapshot. So that's how we'll do the connection. But they're offering 15% off of all your food purchases if you have proof that you're going to see Slapshot. Get a ticket or a receipt or something like that, and then say you're with the Nick DiGilio Film Club. You'll get 15% off the Film Club members of all your food purchases. Plus, they have an old-time hockey beer special of $2 Schlitz Tall Boys tonight. And that's old school. That's old school as it gets. So you can get 15% off your food, a $2 Schlitz Tall Boy, and then why not walk over or drive back over to the movie theater at AMC Rosemont 18. And at 8 o'clock, I will introduce the classic hockey movie with Paul Newman, Slapshot. We'll laugh our butts off for 2 hours, and then I'll talk about it with you guys afterwards with a Q&A. I know a lot about this movie. So there's a lot of great behind-the-scenes stories about Slapshot, and we'll talk all about it after watching one of the funniest movies ever made. So I really hope you guys can make it tonight. Tickets are going pretty good, so you might want to get in there and reserve your seats right now. AMCtheaters.com. AMCtheaters.com. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18. It's tonight's screening of January 8th of Slapshot at 8 o'clock. Go to the seating chart, pick out all the seats that you want. They'll be waiting for you tonight. Movie starts at 8. They're going to start serving dinner and having the old-time hockey party at 6 o'clock over at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant in the Crown Plaza Hotel. So make your reservations now for the movie at AMCtheaters.com. And you can call the Caddyshack Restaurant. If you want to call the Caddyshack Restaurant in Rosemont, maybe make a reservation. Or if you have any questions about it, tell them that you're part of the Nick DiGilio Film Club and you're going to see Slapshot. The phone number for the Caddyshack Restaurant is 847-443-3673. That's 847-443-3673. And I hope to see it tonight. Slapshot, it is really nothing. I haven't seen this movie on the big screen in almost 40 years, probably around 40 years. And to see this really hilarious movie digitally remastered on the big screen with a crowd, it's going to be a blast. So AMCtheaters.com, get your reservations going tonight, and we'll see you all tonight at the theater to watch Slapshot. And then beforehand at the Caddyshack Restaurant to have some chow. 15% off, and you can have some cheap beer as well. All right, it's going to be a fun night. So hope to see you guys there. Okay, we're talking about products that are now obsolete that we never thought would be obsolete. I love talking about this kind of stuff and remembering things and getting nostalgic, and some people actually still have a lot of these things. For instance, 847 area code says paper maps. Remember the rack at the gas station with all the maps? Yes, I do. Remember trying to fold them back up? 301 area code says, I think that Laugh-In used to have the phrase, look that up in your funkin' Wagnalls. Yeah. And then it was also part of every intro for Karnak. Dan, can you find an intro for Karnak? Because it's It's everything. Every single episode of I'm talking about. Maybe there are people too young to know who Carnac is. Carnac the Magnificent is a character that the great Johnny Carson played, and he would come out and he would have a turban on and a cape, and he would answer. He would provide the answer to a question without knowing what the question is. He'd hold the envelope up to his head. He'd say the answer to the question. Then he'd rip the envelope open, take the question out, and read the question. And it was always, you know, it was just like, for instance, the classic one is Sis Boom Ba. And then he opens up the envelope and it says, what does an exploding sheep sound like? So that's the setup. Ed McMahon would always be his, you know, his sidekick as usual. And he would hand him the envelopes. Like each question would be handed to him by Ed McMahon and they would do wacky bits in between. But every time they would do the introduction, Ed McMahon would set it up. Saying that the questions came from Funkin' Wagnall's porch since noon today. It was new. It's noon. It's noon today. They've been sitting out of, you know, they came straight from a mayonnaise jar on Funkin' Wagnall's porch since noon today. That was the setup every single time. And of course, you know, it killed every time. It was great every time. So maybe we can find, do we have it, Dan?
Not quite yet.
Oh, okay. All right, let me go through a couple more texts here while we wait.
I have the envelopes here. They've been hermetically sealed, kept in a mayonnaise jar on Bob Howard's porch since noon today.
Oh, that's wrong. That's different. It's Funkin' Wagnalls. He's supposed to say Funkin' Wagnalls. Wait, what are the odds of that happening? That I set up this whole thing, and I want to get audio proof that Ed McMahon would say that every time, and then he said somebody else's porch. That's weird. Trust me on this. I know my Johnny Carson.
I hold in my hands the envelopes.
Here we go.
A child of four could plainly see these envelopes are hermetically sealed. They've been kept in a mayonnaise jar on Funkin' Wagnall's porch since noon today. No one knows the contents of these envelopes. But you, in your mystical and divine way, will ascertain the answers to the questions, having never before seen the question.
Carnac will give that a shot.
Okay, there you go. So that's... That was my favorite. That was always, I used to get, when I was a kid, and even as an adult, I would get so excited when Carnac would come out. And he always did the bit, Dan, where he'd walk out, they'd introduce him, he'd walk out, and then he'd trip on his way to the desk. He would, every single time, and I laughed every time. Even as an adult, when I watch the reruns, and Carnac trips as he's going to sit down at the desk, I crack up. And I remember one night they did a bit where they put a balsa wood desk in. That looked exactly like Johnny's desk, and he went through the desk. And I remember I was a kid when I saw this. I think they only did it the one time. But I'm telling you, when he went through the, because normally he trips and he catches himself, or Ed kind of reaches out and help him, and then he sits down. But he tripped and went through the balsa wood desk they set up. And I was so, because that had never happened. And I almost fell. I remember watching it as a kid crying with laughter. That's the best. Carnac, the best. Funkin' Wagnall's porch. 773 area code said, I never thought the compact disc would be obsolete. Cecilia says, for an FYI, they sell at Anthropology, sells Polaroid cameras and even disposable ones. I've noticed the old throwbacks lately. Literally everything old is new again. Vinyl is huge amongst many now. And Happy New Year. Yeah, vinyl is big. We have Jim Hanke on every once in a while to talk about it. He's our vinyl expert. And young people have really taken to it. And major, major artists release their albums on vinyl now. Let's see. 847 area code says, we have the World Book Encyclopedia with the 72 and 73 year in review issues. I think I have World Book, too. Pretty sure I did have World Book. Peter in Decatur said, I haven't used it in years, but because of your conversation, I bought an old alarm clock off the shelf, dust and all. Okay. All right. Look at that. Inspiring people to use their old technology, Dan. That's what we're here for. How about slide projectors? Remember when people would do slideshows? You come over, hey, come on over, and we'll look at our vacation slides. Then you'd sit in a room for 3 hours, and they would show pictures of them and their relatives in Florida, you know? Yeah, slide projectors, those are gone too. card catalogs. We had to learn them. I remember learning the Dewey Decimal System. We had library class when I was in at Hamilton in grade school. We had a library class, and oh man, our librarian was a pothead. She was a total pothead. Because this was the, you know, this is the early mid 70s, okay? And I remember there was a back room to the library. Like the class would actually take place in the library. We'd learn the Dewey Decimal System when we'd write stuff and look up books and all kinds of stuff. And it was a library class. I think it was only once a week. I'm pretty sure it was only once a week. But she was a burnout, man. She was a total, I mean, this is 73, maybe 74. So she was a hippie. You know, wore the tie-dye. I can't remember her name, man. And she wore, like, really crazy necklaces. I remember having, like, crazy necklaces. And there was always a funny odor. Like, we would come into the room, and there would always be this funny odor that I didn't quite know what it was until a couple of years later when my best friend's older brother, who was a pothead, was blowing weed in the basement. And I was like, oh, that's what that is. So that's when I realized that the librarian at the school that I went to was a pothead. Now people can go and historically look it up now. I just gave the year and the school so they can go back in time and look up the records to see who the librarian was at that time and know that she was a pothead. I remember she swore at us one time. She was in the back. I guess we were screwing around. I can't remember. We were messing around and we harshed her buzz or something. And she came out from the back room and she said the S word. She screamed out and we all went, Going to school in the 70s was fun, man. Okay, we got a break. I got the weather for you here. And then Blackhawks, we have a Blackhawks Express to play. And it's not a real good one because there hasn't been a ton of good ones for this season. But we always play them back after the game the next morning. So, all right. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. And Steve Grzanich coming up at 5. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We're talking about... products that are obsolete now that we didn't think would be obsolete. How about phone booths? Before phones were pocket-sized supercomputers, people had to stop to make a phone call on the go. The places they stopped to make those phone calls were called phone booths. Once a familiar sight, phone booths like the landlines and phone books contained in them. Phone booths were dealt a mortal blow with the arrival of cell phones. Just 100,000 payphones remain compared to 2 million in 1999. Wow. Are there any payphones around? Does anybody see payphones anywhere?
I always look for them, and I have not found a functioning one in years.
There may be one. I think there might be one in the L Strop right by my house. I think they may have a cell phone in there. That's kind of where you look for them. It's like, you know, the subway stations and stuff like that. That's kind of where you might be able to find them. But yeah,
this was years ago, but I forgot my phone and I was trying to reach you and I tried using it and it didn't work. So
oh, it didn't.
Hopefully it works
oh,
now.
Oh, so this but, was it was the one across
yeah.
from my place.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe they've got it replaced. I don't know. All right.
Texters are mentioning a lot of airports have them still.
Oh, sure. Of course. That makes sense. Airports. But they don't have phone booths. The pay phones exist, but they don't have phone booths anymore. The actual little teeny room that you would go in, close the door, and talk.
I have heard of places actually having that had them in building, just taking out the phone.
So you can actually have a phone call. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. 219 area code says, hey, Nick and Dan, love your show. I'm an editor at World Book Encyclopedia, headquartered right here in Chicago and conveniently located across the river from Britannica. Whenever I get asked what I do, where I work, the next question is, you guys are still around? And then do they still print or is it all online? We still do. We have lots and tons of online resources. They're mostly in schools and libraries, of course, but they have the most beautiful spinescapes now. Once all the volumes line up in order, they make a gorgeous piece of artwork. That's cool. That's really cool. 312 area code says, the Norridge Harwood Heights Library has a selection of manual typewriters for patrons' use. Not sure if they can be checked out, but yeah, you have to use them. They are being used at the library. That's cool. 301 area code says, I have an old Remington Rand typewriter, and there's a thriving small company that repairs old typewriters. I bet, man. I bet there are some, you know, smaller businesses like that that fix those kind of things, like typewriters and stuff, that probably have a pretty good business, because where else are you going to go, you know? 765 area code says, I still have a compact desk toy desktop computer with floppy disk drive and a rotary dial phone. Carl says, remember S&H green stamps, of course. And 309 area code says, the full service gas stations. Yeah. Remember when they'd come out and they would check your oil?
Forget what state it is, but they recently relaxed those regulations. It used to have full service. And so there was a period of adjustment where a lot of people didn't know how to pump their own gas.
Oh, wow.
Because they had never done it before.
Oh, wow. All right. What about phone books? We were talking about phone booths, phone books. Do they still deliver them? Because I haven't gotten one.
They still deliver them.
They do? I don't know. Because normally they would just, you know, they would deliver, because I live in an apartment building, so they just throw them in the, they throw them in the lobby, and then you fend for yourself. I haven't gotten one. I do not have a phone book in my apartment at the moment. I know that for a fact. So, all right, well, all this stuff is gone. But again, it's 2019. This is the year that Blade Runner takes place, so flying cars next week, Dan.
Looking forward to it.
All right. All right. Let's take a break. Tomorrow we've got Kevin Powell is going to join us to talk sports. Good old Kevin. He'll be here with us. But we're going to take a break here. News is up next.